It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We have a big panel for our very last TWiT from the Brick House Studios. Join Greg Farrow from the Packet Pushers Network, Alan Malventano from PC Perspective, from Engadget, Devendra Hardawar, and Alex Wilhelm from Mattermark as we talk about the latest news in the tech world, including the Galaxy Note 7, what 5G really means, wither Apple. It's going to be an amazing panel. You stay here. TWiT is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 575, recorded Sunday, August 14th, 2016. Goodbye, Brick House. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/TWiT and entering the promo code TWiT. And by audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/TWiT2. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a cover page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, business, or online store. Enter the offer code TWIT and get 10% off. And by GoToMeeting. Be a meeting MVP. GoToMeeting is the online meeting tool that lets you easily collaborate and present from anywhere with one click, so you always put on your best performance. Step up your meeting game and start your free 30-day trial at GoToMeeting.com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the last TWiT from our beautiful Brick House studio. So we thought we'd gather, first of all, some of my favorite people, and then have them all in studio at the same time, which is kind of wild. But I think it's going to make a fun TWiT. And I think it's the first time in many years we've had five people all seated together in studio with us. So it's great to have you. Let's start over here with Alex Wilhelm.
Hello, how's it going?
With his Jet t-shirt. That's a now instant memorabilia.
That's why I wore it. I thought it'd be on the show, so I'm like, you know what? I'll wear someone else's uniform for a topical comment
it is.
Joke thing.
And you know? Walmart just called. They're offering you $1.50. Will you take it?
Plus stock options, I'm in.
if I was not 40, an all-cash offer, I think, yeah.
$40 million a month in losses, I'll sell to anyone who's buying.
Yeah.
So
actually, you got to think Mark Lohr's going, was close.
Diapers.com was a fluke. No one knows.
That was close. Also with us from Engadget Senior. Oh, by the way, Mattermark. I should give you a plug for your employer. Mattermark.com. Also here from Engadget, Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar. Always welcome.
Hey, thanks for having
me. I don't think you've ever been in studio before.
No. I'm based in Brooklyn, so I am always calling in. But I'm here for Intel's conference. So.
The Intel Developers Forum, IDF, is this week.
So perfect timing.
Yay! I think a lot of people are here for IDF, actually.
It was really hard to get a hotel.
Same for us.
Yeah, Greg Farrow here from the Packet Pushers Network.
Hey, everybody.
Packetpushers.net. Greg, we've had you on the show before, but this is the first time in the States.
Yep.
You're based normally in?
Cheltenham in the UK.
Cheltenham. You're based in the UK.
In the UK, yeah.
Actually Australia.
In the Midlands, you know, Rockwalls, Greenwall, Cows on the Common, warm beer.
Do you have moors there?
Yes.
What is a moor?
A moor is actually in the Scottish Highlands, and it's normally rolling hills covered in gorse or heather.
Heather.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think of the Hound of the Baskervilles and the moors, and I never knew. They were always going out to the moors. What is that?
Moors down in the southwestern corner, down near Devon and Cornwall and that sort of
thing. So they have moors there, too.
Yeah, I think it's actually a geographical feature. I'd have to get some Wikipedia action going to double-check.
Aren't we glad we have
him
here today?
I'm in the Midlands. With the rolling hills and the rock walls and the commons.
Beautiful.
And cows. Yeah, cows on the
common. A lot of call for networking out there.
It's a long story that I ended up there after marrying an English girl.
Children. Because you're originally from Australia.
I am an Australian, yes. Yeah. And I left Australia 10 years ago, been living there. But all my work is now in the U.S.
Well,
working
welcome.
With enterprise IT.
Are you here for IDF?
I am here for IDF and a bunch of other things, yes.
Right. And I'm really thrilled to have Alan Malventano here. He's a regular on This Week in Computer Hardware, writes for PC Perspective. Former, don't get excited, guys, NSA agent. He works in the U.S. Navy for many years as a submariner. You also were an analyst at the National Secrecy Administration. But now is really kind of the guru of the hard drive. And I've been friends with Alan for it's got to be almost 10 years now. Yeah, I remember calling on you constantly as the SSD revolution
for
began. Yeah, the ultimate gaming machine and a lot of stuff. You had the craziest setup. How many SSDs did you have ganged up?
When?
Still? You still have that?
It changes all the time.
You had this amazing, you had hundreds of them all ganged together.
And 10 years ago, there weren't good SSDs out yet. And I had, I was pitching it to you for Uggam build, potentially, because you were talking about Velociraptors at the time.
Yeah, those are 10,000 RPM spinning discs.
Yeah, and I'd found this, I forgot who made it, but it was a red SSD enclosure, and you put 6 SD cards in it, and it rated them inside of a 2.5-inch SSD enclosure.
And you gave 40 gigs.
Something like that.
We've come a long way, baby. In fact, you were telling me about a SSD that is 60 terabytes now? Is that what it is?
Seagate showed that at Flash Memory Summit.
Yeah. That's what you're here for, the Flash Memory Summit, FSM. FMS.
FMS, yeah.
Great. Are you going to go to IDF or you just came out for FMS?
Ryan's covering IDF.
Okay.
I'm going back. Schratt
from PC Perspective.
Yep.
We'll talk more about that 60 gig hard drive and some other things that you learned at FMS.
Cool.
Wow, what a great panel. Nice to have you all. Thank you all for being here. You are here on, next twit. The next twit we do will be for better or for worse. We may not have lights. We may not even have electricity, but we will be at the new studio, the Eastside Studio. So the way this is going to work a week from today is I'll do the last show from our studio, the radio show on Sunday afternoon, and we're all going to board. We've rented a cable car, San Francisco cable car. We're all going to get on that, including a camera with a live view attached, and we'll make the transition over to the new studio, and you can all join us. If you're here next week, you'll be asked to carry a box.
Worst pitch ever. Yeah, you're free to come down and carry this back and forth.
Carry it back and forth. Yes. One box. That's all I ask.
Yeah, that's how your friends always get you.
Instead
to help
of a moving truck, you take the cable car.
Pizza.
Yeah. Just hanging out.
We're going to have a free pizza and beer. I can confirm. Twin told me. Leadership and management all the way down.
That's actually was a seminal moment in my in growing up. I knew I was an adult when I actually said, no, I'm not going to help you move. Then you know.
How old were you? 43?
In my 40s. I am an adult now. I will not help you move, so do not ask.
I once moved house in a shopping cart.
Oh, wow.
Like a shopping trolley. I literally moved.
You put everything. I did that in college.
Three dumpsters down.
Yeah.
Actually, it was a squat, but that's another story. I was moving from one squat to the other, but you know.
You weren't far off.
You want to tell us more about your early days?
Perhaps not.
Interesting.
Maybe this isn't the forum.
Interesting.
Maybe if there was cocktails, you know.
Where should we begin? There's a lot to talk about. I'm kind of interested, and this is a really abstruse subject, but this week Google let it leak that they have a new operating system they're working on. It's Fuchsia is the code name, and they actually posted it. It's open source. They posted the code on GitHub, of all things. Is it a IoT operating system? Maybe, but maybe not, because it looks like it has desktop capabilities as well. It is not a Linux kernel. Fuchsia is based on something called the Magenta kernel. That's based on something you might know if you pay attention to this kind of stuff called the Little kernel, which is, I don't know if it's considered a real-time operating system. It's definitely an embedded kernel.
It's really lightweight. OS from the sound.
Small is the idea, right? But it is SMP aware, so you could use it with, desktop processors. It's not small in power. It's small but mighty. Why would Google want a new operating system? And what might they be using it for, Greg?
Well, I think what you're seeing is this. There's a broad trend across all of technology around convergence. That which was separated is now converged. So this is the trend that Apple's led with iPhone, you get your operating system and your hardware together. Google's doing the same thing with Chrome. You get your device and the operating system is pre-installed. And the years of having these separated is kind of passing us by. You know, Apple Watches, IoT, the operating systems are sort of built together.
But this sounds like the opposite. This sounds like fragmentation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's stripping out all the stuff you don't need. So there's in a
so this would be eventually the operating system. You
yes,
think, for
I
all
believe
Google
it's
products?
Going to be.
Wow,
is this similar in theme to kind of the Windows Everywhere strategy Microsoft is currently working on? Because this feels like a pan OS across all devices and form factors, screen sizes, IoT up to big screens. Because Android's terrible on anything that's not about this size.
Yeah.
It's not an OS for everywhere.
So the way operating systems are kind of structured today is that there's a lot of functionality in the operating system. It's not just running the CPU, booting the hard drive, getting the operating system running. What we're seeing is thousands of functions built into the kernel of Linux, for example. And if you look at other operating systems like QNX, these are microkernels that have the bare minimum functionality to boot, and then everything else is an application.
Apple uses a microkernel called Mach.
Yeah.
Same idea.
That's right.
But Magenta is not using that same structure. Is that what you said?
Linux is not, although it's funny. Linux started more as a modular kernel that you would plug in at what was needed, but as it's shipped today, it's got everything plugged in. Unless you build your own kernel, it's likely that you'll have support for possible kind
of hardware. So I see this. The person who's behind this has invented, developed many kernels before, the key developer behind it.
Yeah, interesting.
And I see this as a reversion towards microkernels.
Interesting.
Back to real-time operating systems with all the functionality stripped out so that you're maximizing your battery power. There's no unnecessary apps, and you have to build a modular packaging system on top of that. So if you want printer driver support, you add printer driver support. It doesn't come as a standard feature. Mm-hmm.
If an unsophisticated user would look at this and say, oh, they don't want to do Android anymore, that this would be for the phone because it has the feature. In fact, it's got the material design interface. They're using something called Flutter, which will give them material design. It's really designed around using little battery as possible. Mm-hmm. It's kind of almost a real-time operating system. It feels like a phone operating system more than, say, a desktop computer.
I think everybody points the finger at Google and says, this is Chrome. Why is the Chrome operating system different from the Android operating system?
Right.
Why don't you converge these two together?
So this would be that.
I would speculate that.
What's interesting is they're putting Android on Chrome OS.
Yeah.
You can get the Android store on Chrome OS, and they're running Android in a subsystem on Chrome OS.
I wonder if they're running away from Oracle. So you know the Oracle v Java. Mm-hmm. Java lawsuit versus Google, and maybe they feel...
No more Java.
Android operating system is all built in Java and then compiled. So this might be
They would say Dalvik, not Java.
It might be a backdoor. Yeah. But, it might be a backdoor, a way of saying, I've got an emergency if this court case comes
unstuck. Well, more than that, I think that they're running into... For instance, I think the EU and Russia just fined them $6.8 million, which is kind of a laughable amount. Yeah. That's like, I'm going to find you a penny. But the EU's been down on them because of the way they manage Android. And it's funny because in a way they're getting in trouble because Android has an open source arm as well as a proprietary arm app. They're not beating up on Apple for doing, for requiring that all iPhones have Apple iOS on it.
Yeah.
They're mad at Google, though, because they're making some restrictions on what people who want to use Android with Google services have to do.
Well, Android's global market share is far higher than Apple's, right?
It makes more of a difference. Yeah.
Right. We're very accustomed to, in America, to see a lot of iPhones and Android kind of on parity, but outside of this country, that's not the norm. And so, to me, the antitrust concerns here are a lot more relevant than the Apple comparison would kind of theoretically dictate.
I'm not saying... I am saying kind of
you did say.
but this would be Google's attempt to say, well okay, fine. We're not going to do an open source, or we are going to, I don't know, maybe a do-over.
I think it's a sort of a do-over. What about security? I mean, how many vulnerabilities are there in Androids that we talk about every week? There's a massive insecurity in Android. Something like 40% of all Android phones are compromised today.
Is that due to the slow update cycle for most consumer handsets, or is that
that's more the problem?
Well, they're
fixing it. Google's fixing it, but they're fixing it in
The current iteration.
Yeah, right.
It's very difficult to update the Android operating system with its current architecture. Yeah. You have to replace the entire operating system. If you had a microkernel, you could start to modularize the deployment of patches.
Interesting.
And so you're not...
Can I confess?
Yeah.
I don't know what microkernel means.
It's a kernel, but it's really
smaller. No, I understand that, but why do I particularly care? Pretend that I'm a normal consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why I care about anything you just said.
It's kind of like RISC versus CISC.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Great.
What you're doing is reducing the surface of the kernel. The kernel is the core of every operating system. Your Linux kernel is a fairly substantial piece of work, and it's been evolved over 20 years.
Sure.
It has hundreds, if not thousands, of functions built into it. And every one of those functions has to work perfectly for it to be stable and reliable. And when you upgrade it, you replace all of that code. With a microkernel, what you do is pull out all the stuff into pieces, into modules, if you will, and you decouple them from the kernel. So the kernel now has the bare minimum of attack surface, the least amount of code, the minimal amount of functionality.
I want to turn that answer, which is beautiful, into an EDM dance remix. That was incredible. Like, it had a good flow to it.
Just ask the chat room. We'll have one before the show's over, I can promise you. It's interesting to read. I'm reading an Android Police article. That because they made it open source, people have kind of poured through the code, and there's interesting things to see there. For instance, a permissions-based or capabilities-based security model. They're obviously paying attention to that. I find it interesting that they have a renderer in there they're calling Escher, which supports OpenGL or Vulkan. Mm-hmm. And many of the features of OpenGL or Vulkan, that's almost for, I guess some of it could be UI, but it could be for gaming too, right?
It could be for the one. They're doing it more for UI, I would imagine, because those are more efficient, like Vulkan especially is a more efficient API.
Uses less battery.
Less CPU resources in general. Yeah. That's how it's able to get higher frame rates in games and whatnot. Mm. But you can flip that the other way around.
It would also benefit you on the UI.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right.
That's what Apple's Metal does. Similar sort of thing.
Right.
And because they bind the metal very closely, the reason it's called Metal is because it runs directly on the GPU.
DirectX was kind of that idea as well, was it not?
Yeah.
Kind of, that there was more overhead.
Okay.
So DirectX 12 reduces that overhead.
Also, we built in support for 32-bit, 64-bit ARM, and 64-bit i86.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So Intel's got a number of really good power-efficient atoms that they're trying to drive into the market. So Intel IDF last year or the year before, they were announcing a smartphone, like a prototype, that was thinner than an Apple iPhone. So the Apple iPhone was 6.1 millimeters and Intel had a 5.9 millimeter prototype. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really taken off because the ARM processors are still advanced ahead of what Intel's doing. Mm-hmm. So I think what Google's doing here is giving Intel a chance to come back into the game and get their chips into smartphones.
Somebody has, in the chat room, mentioned this maybe is somewhat what like Samsung's trying to do with their own operating system, Tizen. Be less dependent on Google, less dependent on Android. Also, by the way, according to Tavis Geiselbrecht from Google, it will be available for the Raspberry Pi 3 as well.
Yep.
So, interesting.
I mean, that kind of makes sense more for the lower powered computers. Yeah. I wonder what this means for IoT devices and maybe, you know, other things along those lines. Like, if Android is too heavy to run on even some phones these days, like, as we get smaller and smaller devices, maybe with 5G networks and that aren't using much data speeds, like, we need something to run on those.
Yeah, we need IoT devices that run for 10 years. Yeah.
Right, as discussed earlier. But then notably, Microsoft and Google then are working on this problem, but Apple probably isn't. Or at least I haven't heard any rumors that they're building out a similar microkernel, to use your definition.
They already run a microkernel.
I'm just so wrong, it's even funny.
OS 10 was a microkernel from
the It's always been a microkernel.
Yeah. Really dumb. Yeah. I'm using a microkernel right now.
I mean, it's a pretty old microkernel.
It is, but Apple continues to iterate. And because they sell the phone and the operating system together, they've iterated the kernel substantially.
Yeah, in fact, iOS and the watchOS probably run on Mach as well, right? I don't know about watchOS.
I'm not too sure, but their ability to design the CPU to take advantage of the kernel and the apps and to squeeze out the power and you know, all those types of features show you the power of a microkernel. And also the ability of an Apple phone to download its patches reliably, whereas, you know, updating your Android isn't necessarily a foolproof game.
Yeah, but that also doesn't it have as much to do with the economics of it and the fact that Apple is the only manufacturer of the iPhone? And
no,
they've strong-armed, at least in the U.S., they've strong-armed the carriers to say, you're going to push our updates the minute they're available. I mean, Apple used to push big updates that were much of the operating system. They're now down to these Delta updates. But it took them a while to get there.
But it's still not very reliable. You still hear people complaining that they'd updated their Android and it crashed and burned.
Oh, never hear that on the Apple side. never.
Well, it happens a lot less, right?
Does it?
It's a little more convenient now, too. Like, you can say, download the update, and tonight, in the middle of the night, install this for me. And it's nice.
If it was a really big problem, you'd hear that the website's complaining that Apple's blowing it, and Steve Jobs would never have stood for it.
we hear that all the time. Maybe you don't hear that in the UK. We hear that all the time.
I also wonder, like, is this trying to fix some of the original problems in Android, right? You were talking about, you know, being so reliant on Java, but also the idea that, I don't know, maybe they didn't expect Android to get as big as it did, and now it's everywhere, and it's like, oh my God, this is the wrong engine for what we're trying to do right now. So
they didn't plan this, obviously. Yeah. It's pretty clear that they had no idea what was going to happen with Android. And you know, it's funny, because one of the reasons I'm fascinated by this is because we had this conversation some months ago, where is the next operating system coming from? Mm-hmm. And I think our conclusion in general was, who cares? It's not about. It's no longer about the operating system. Hasn't the cloud meant at this point we're operating system agnostic? All our data, all our even some of many of our programs. Oh, that's my phone talking. Just ignore that. My daughter calls right in the middle of Twit every week.
Yeah. That's great if you're a kid and don't want your parents to actually answer the phone, but say you've called.
Yes.
You call in there at church.
Sorry
to blow up her spot, but that come on. We've all tried that one, right?
Oh, Dad. Oh, you're working now? Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'll call you next week. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
And by the way, could you send a check?
Yeah, that's the other thing. The message will say, I'm out of money.
Yeah, I think that you're right, although most people in the cloud, I think there was a statistical survey showing that 70% of people are running Ubuntu in the cloud.
70%?
Yeah. So if you're on AWS or Rackspace, you're probably running Ubuntu. And then
Ubuntu Linux.
So Linux did win.
But oh my God. Arguably,
Linux won a long time ago. Linux, Android is Linux. Chromebook is Linux. Look how well the Chromebooks are selling all of a sudden. They're huge. Mm-hmm. In fact, a great article in Wired Magazine this week from a writer who said to students, your next laptop for going to college should not be Windows or Mac. It should be a Chromebook. And I kind of agree with him. Yep. He says, especially in light of the fact that the Android Play Store is coming to Chromebooks.
Regarding the price difference, why would you ever buy a Chromebook over a fully featured OS X computer?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
What? Because it doesn't do what I want. It only does one thing.
It doesn't have the expandability of many apps and stuff. Like,
Exactly why you buy it, because it doesn't have the complexity. It doesn't have the security
issues.
But what
if I need to run software for my school, my university?
What software are you talking about?
Oh, MathLab?
MathLab.
Okay.
R.
Yeah,
Photoshop.
Keep in mind that not everybody's running,
okay, so if you're a physics or math major.
I used to support.
Or computer science, or design, or philosophy, because you just throw it out the window in that case.
If you look, I worked with a team of schools in the UK, and there's 20 or 30 private schools in the chain. They're switching to Chromebooks for two reasons. First of all, a Chromebook is disposable. Mm-hmm. If somebody drops it or
pulls
it down, you get another one, and away you go, right? Yeah. And the price point is fair. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't use an Apple iPad. If you drop it and break it, you've blown up a substantial amount of money.
I would guess that there will be, if there aren't already, web-based interfaces to MATLAB.
Probably.
I'm sure there is.
But it's a bunch
R
of
is a statistics programming language. But you can easily do cloud-based coding. That's not a problem. That was one thing that stopped me for a little while, but there are plenty of solutions like Code Anywhere that let you do that.
It's easy to see why Chromebooks have taken off in schools just like that, because I used to work in IT for a very long time, and the sort of idea of having a cheap disposable laptop that you can set up real easily, if it breaks, no big deal, that's great for institutional purposes. For a student, for something that they're going to bring and rely on for their entire school life, you want something a little more expandable.
Point is that most education systems between, say, kindergarten to year 10, you don't need any of that stuff.
Oh, no, for sure. That's what I was talking about.
And the advantage of Google Chrome is that everything exists in the web. So for most schools, in Google
Docs.
For
schools and those sorts of things.
If you're 15 or below, get a Chromebook. If you're over 15, you need actual software.
If you're going to college,
preparing
to enter the workforce. You're going to need to run the apps that you're going to be running at work. And, you know, you're not going to go to, you know, a video, a video editing lab or something. Anywhere else where they need to use specialized things.
You wouldn't show up to a video podcast with an iPad Pro, for example.
Here is... He just challenged you, by the way.
We bounced off.
Here's MATLAB on the web.
Yeah,
that's true.
A full MATLAB on the web at MathWorks.com.
Most of those will definitely exist on the web somehow, and we'll get there. But for big things like editing multimedia files.
That's a fractional usage. Like in the UK, something like 80% of real estate agents use Google Docs. And they use Chromebooks.
I bet you a lot of college kids these days are editing videos on their smartphone, not on their desktop.
That's actually
computer.
A really, really good point, because it's created, edited, and consumed on their phones.
Right.
Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm. You have a multimedia device already. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be in your pocket. Yeah. And I think part of the problem is a lot of us, even younger people like you guys, still think of a computer as a desktop or a laptop device.
Yeah.
I think if you're in college today, maybe that's not...
Yeah, you can edit video in YouTube itself. Like YouTube
directly.
Creator, you can actually get a fair amount of...
Yeah.
So I agree.
No, I wouldn't want to do... I wouldn't want to be editing something like this on YouTube Creator, but... You know,
if you only need surface-level, lightweight applications, you can get away with web-based alternatives that are
It's just my position that most people, even college students, that's all they
need. I agree with you entirely. Yeah. But given that this is, you know,
nobody watching this show would.
Exactly.
But they also, we also have the expertise to stay out of trouble, to fix a problem. Mm-hmm. And so I think those people should be using, frankly, Linux.
That guy says, I use an abacus, which is a great rejoinder to this entire conversation about microkernels.
Yeah. So excellent. Yeah. And that's, I mean, keep in mind, too, that people that watching this show and certainly around the table can easily afford $2,000, $3,000 for a computer and justify it.
And it's an important priority for us. So we will.
But if you're a school and you're buying 10,000 computers, there's a big difference between a $300 Chromebook and a $600 iPad.
Yeah.
That,
it's a 2X.
I take a bigger offense as I'm seeing the Chromebooks get more and more expensive, right? HP just released one. There's the Pixel idea.
I don't mind seeing a little bit more expensive ones or better quality. I mean, for a lot of the Chromebooks, they're just netbooks, right? They're kind of crap.
Right, yeah.
But it's a $400, $500 aluminum like the Acer or the Dell, those aren't that expensive. I mean, that's still...
Yeah, people can still buy a fancy Chromebook.
The point is you have a choice. Nobody should buy a Pixel.
That's, yeah.
That's insane.
Going past $500... is kind of crazy. Some of the newer ones are going higher and higher.
Are they?
Yeah.
Is $500 the upper threshold for what you should pay for a Chromebook?
That's kind of what it sounds like.
You should get a touch screen now because of Android. You should get 4 gigs of RAM. You should get...
Probably
more,
yeah.
Yeah, maybe 8. I don't think you need... You don't need a lot of storage in a Chromebook, obviously.
True.
I don't think you probably need an i5. An Atom or a Celeron's probably sufficient.
But then if I run more than like 15 tabs in Chrome, it's going to slow down. You know, that to me is when
bad usage. I don't know why so many of, and it's always people on this show have 1,000 tabs open and then bitch because it's all so slow. Why the hell do you have so many tabs open?
In my defense, I kvetch. I don't bitch.
You should.
It's a non-gender pejorative.
Close a freaking tab once in
a
while.
And I will not, sir, close any, quote, freaking tabs or flipping tabs or fracking tabs because I'm using them, darn it.
You're not using 15 tabs.
I'm using like 45 at a time, dude.
You're going to read
like
it.
What?
Okay.
Because like you're working on 3 different articles. You've got a bunch of tabs open. Different browser windows. I need a computer to do work. I don't just doodle with it.
Don't anthropomorphize your condition on everybody else.
Don't talk about Betsy that way.
I don't think anthropomorphize this means what you think it does.
To the Wired article, to what you guys
are
were talking about.
Are we still playing Game of Geeks?
No.
The whole idea, like some college students, sure. If you don't need much going into college, that's fine. But a lot of kids, you may not know what you want to do or what you want to start getting into. And having something that locks you in, like within a year or two, just like you change a major, you may need to change your computer if it turns out you actually need
to. So next time, when I was 18, I should have been buying a family sedan ready for I have kids.
Just so you're prepared.
Just so I'm prepared for when I'm married and have 5 kids, yeah?
Actually,
I like that analogy.
Get a van.
That's a rubbish idea. I think that's bunk, right?
I mean,
when you're 18, you go out and buy a stupid car, you turn the wheels inside out, and the differential.
That's why you buy a Chromebook. You buy a cheap computer because you don't know what you're going to do with it.
And then if you do want more, then you spend up big and you buy the BMW 3 Series.
But then when you need to get on the highway, you need a real car.
This analogy has died.
How many tabs do you have? How many tabs do you have open right now? How many tabs do you have open right now?
Okay,
you don't have any tabs because you're on a freaking iPad.
My home computer has over 80.
80? You know? Like you keep it open all the time?
Yeah, I have a special app that tracks all the apps so that I can save the tabs. And
why don't you... The reason you don't close it because it takes a while to reload it or something?
Generally because I'm researching around 8 to 10 topics on a different thing. So
I guess I just don't work that way. I know a lot of the people... Yeah. I mean, Steve Gibson, it's all about tabs for him.
I have, I think, 40 across 2 browsers and 30 across 4 windows and 2 browsers.
How big are the
browsers.
Titles of the...
They're little. You just got to click on them.
You go by the icons.
Yeah. See, right there.
You kind of know where an article came from. Yeah. That's the only use of favicons that's ever used.
Favicons are great.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be negative or contrary. I just think that, like, if you're going to do more than a very simple task and one at a time, having a full-feature computer is my preference. And I think that everyone should have the flexibility to have...
I'm not telling you what to get. You should get whatever you want. And anybody who wants to take on... the complexity, the security issues, the responsibility of a general purpose computer absolutely should.
Start cheap
but
and
it's
scale
like,
up.
I wouldn't recommend you build your own computer either.
Sure.
It's a great thing if you want to, but you should know what you're getting into. And I feel that, unfortunately, a lot of people are doing what we all did 10 years ago because you didn't have a choice, which is buying Windows or Mac. And it's now inappropriate. It's time to start thinking either of a tablet or of a Chromebook because that's all most people need.
It's interesting that we've reached that threshold right when security on Windows devices is now inherent and easy to use. Because during the Windows XP era, the 10 years ago you're describing, that's when security was the worst. And now Windows 10 is actually pretty good. Well, NSA guy can tell us
more. Here's an interesting example. I had a great caller on the radio show lovely lady, Rose. She is a community manager for a synagogue, and as a result, sad to say, a target, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Her Facebook account, which I couldn't understand it at first. I spent about half an hour with her on the air. Her Facebook account, unaccountably, people were posting Turkish language spam links to porn sites on. She had lost, all her friends had unfriended her. Her synagogue had blocked her posts. Facebook had warned her that she was spending out too many links. Clearly, somebody had co-opted her Facebook account. And I asked her all the questions you would ask. Okay, what, you change your password? Oh, yeah, change it all the time. I encouraged her to change to two-factor. She wasn't using two-factor. I said, make sure you disconnect all your connected apps. I thought maybe some app is posting on her behalf. She said, I did.
Yep.
I said, you've checked all your browser plugins. Make sure no... are you what browser? She's on a Mac using Chrome.
Yeah, she checked almost every box.
She did. She checked every box.
Yep.
You were listening.
I was.
Mm.
And it took me a while. In fact, we did this off the air. Finally found out she had a man-in-the-middle attack going, but not from a bad guy, but from her antivirus. She was running a vast antivirus and had installed in a vast certificate. And I asked her to look at those Facebook certificate, and it was going through a vast.
Yeah.
Now, my theory, and I can't confirm it because I can't see the computer, is that it wasn't Avast doing this, obviously, but that Avast had somehow been hacked and somebody had figured out.
No, they do SSL interception.
Right,
right.
Yeah, as part of inspecting.
Yes, it was a man in the middle. Yeah. So the certificate was not to Facebook, it was to Avast.
It's the Avast. They were compromised.
Right, and they were compromised.
They were using, they were binding root certificates, and their private root certificate was lost some time ago. You should not use.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you shouldn't be using Avast.
See, I remember we were talking about this on Security Now, that there's something was wrong. Okay, so they had been compromised. Yeah. There you go.
So your browser trusts, your browser has a certificate store in which you contain the root certificates, right? And when you install Avast, it puts its own certificate into the root store. So
a lot of antiviruses and security software do this misguidedly.
They should not do it.
Lenovo did it with Superfish, remember,
for advertising. The problem here is Facebook. Facebook should do end-to-end security validation. So when the client presents a certificate to Facebook,
from the user,
and they see it's not the user's client certificate, they see an Avast client certificate, they should say that it's been
however,
a man in the middle.
This was a quasi-legitimate man in the middle that this antivirus was using to protect her.
Well, what those virus vendors are often doing is capturing the traffic that goes through and then selling that
data
for money.
That's what Avast was doing.
That's what Avast was doing. And so is Verizon and Comcast and AT&T. So as your data crosses their network, they're now capturing that data and selling that off.
So clearly somebody got a hold of Avast's certificate, some Turkish interloper, and was using that somehow to manage.
Fairly well known.
Yeah.
Well, not very well known, but yeah.
Well, and I think because she was working for a synagogue, she probably was targeted. But in any event, my point, the reason I bring this up is, here's a person who shouldn't be using Macintosh.
Yes.
And probably was told rightly, well, if you're going to use a computer, it's easier, it's safer, use a Macintosh. Yep. Even that wasn't
But it's
secure.
Not the Mac that's at fault here. It's Avast.
It's Avast. Yeah. But
like
no,
most of the problems we're having at the moment is the virus software.
Here's the fault. She bought antivirus software and installed it, and the Mac let her because you're the user. You know what you're doing. You type your admin password. You must know what you're doing. She shouldn't have been using a Mac. My position is no one should be using it unless they have the knowledge to do, and most people don't.
Or a specific need. If you reduce it, this is where microkernels come in.
Right.
Avast attaches to the microkernel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so,
So, Leo, I think you make a very functional point, and one that I can't really dispute for the short term. But to me, moving people back to less complex systems that may even be more effective is anti-progress in some way to technology fields.
No, that's real progress.
Oh, that's real progress. I had it backwards all along. Dang. No, I still think you're completely wrong. But I respect your point, and I think you're lovely.
Thank you. Let's take a break on that high note. Thank you. Alex Wilhelm is here from Mattermark.com, where he's an analyst for financial markets.
That's close enough.
Yeah, sort of.
Well, I mean, you always get it wrong, but I still love you.
Well, what do you do?
I kind of cover where technology and finance intersect. So startups, acquisitions, IPOs, that sort of thing. Yeah.
For financial professionals.
That and entrepreneurs that are currently trying to build things.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Also, I know what Engadget does, I think. Devendra Hardawar, senior editor at Engadget.
It's in the name. We like gadgets.
It's in the name, baby.
Yeah.
A fine Verizon property.
Yeah.
Any changes there because of that?
We have a very nice stub at the bottom of all of our Verizon posts saying that, Verizon doesn't have any control. Yeah, and they'll have to take it out of our cold, dead hands. Yeah.
Good. Good. Rightly so. And they'd be foolish to do that. They now or soon will be owning Yahoo.
Yep.
And I believe they've also acquired Alta Vista and Ask Jeeves. No, I'm just joking.
close, though. Very, very, very close.
AOL and Yahoo. Mm-hmm. They're collecting old internet properties. They're so fine. And actually, it's interesting. Arianna Huffington has decided that she no longer wants to work at the Huffington Post. However, her name will remain behind.
She's quitting Huffington Post because to start her well-being website.
Well-being startup. Thrive.
She really likes
she
sleep.
Needs, she's not sleeping properly,
yeah,
apparently.
It's all sleep.
What?
All the time.
Yeah.
Have you heard the nap room story?
That's a true story, by the way.
Yeah.
Hold on. Wait a minute. We got to take a break. I want to hear that, and I want to hear that, and I want to hear more. Also here, it's great to have Alan Malventano from PC Perspective, PCPer.com, and Greg Farrow from the Packet Pushers podcast. This is fun. PacketPushers.net. Our show today brought to you by My Mattress. Speaking of sleeping properly, did you know that that was what was coming up?
Yep.
So that was like a segue you were working on?
No, I was lying.
Oh. Arianna, darling, all you need is a Casper mattress. You'll sleep better. You will love it. You will love it. I love our Casper mattress. And you know, it's great because I didn't buy it because it was less expensive. And it is because they eliminate the middleman. I didn't buy it because of the 100 nights that you could try before you buy. I bought it because it was easy to get inside because it comes in a box. It's awesome. Delivered directly to your door. It's an award-winning mattress, just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's got latex, springy latex foam on top of supportive memory foam to give you just the right amount of cush but firm support. It's exactly what I need, and I think it's exactly what most people need, but the beauty part is there's no risk. You can you buy it today. You'll get free delivery, painless returns within a 100-day period. You don't have to pay a penny. You just call them. They'll come and get it. This is so much better than lying on a bed in a showroom for 5 minutes. You get 100 days to decide whether it's right for you. I think you will. Free shipping and returns anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. They are made in the U.S. Business Intelligence Group Innovation Award winner for 2016, by the way. It's obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. Even fairer when you use our offer code TWIT at Casper.com. Go to Casper.com/TWIT, Casper.com/TWIT. Use the promo code TWIT. You'll get $50 off any size mattress. I got one for my son in college because the dorm mattresses,
oh, wow.
Not so much.
Not such good mattresses.
That is a spoiled college kid right there.
Well,
a Casper mattress.
But yeah, but you know what? It came in a box. He just brought bring it upstairs. He opened it up. I mean, it was actually pretty cool. And it was inexpensive enough that after a few years, I said, you can leave it in the dorm now. You don't have to take it with you.
Although they're really light and easy to move around.
Yeah, that's true,
cool.
too.
Yeah,
His son's just very, very weak. He can't lift heavy things.
No, he's a man. He's a macho man. He's a bro. Casper.com/twit. Enter the code TWIT for $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. Casper, the best mattress, Arianna. Just get it. Arianna Huffington.
That would be the ultimate endorsement.
Your Greek accent sounds like Count Dracula.
I have interviewed her when she was Arianna Stassinopoulos.
Uh-huh.
She wrote a book about Picasso, darling, and it was so good. It was so beautiful. Have you ever talked to her? She talks just like that.
She's around the office.
Devindra, darling.
That'd be great. I'd love that.
I'm not sleeping so very well. So I'm going to leave this. I'm leaving this all behind. Yes. And I'm going to start on the website called Thrive. What's it called? Huff Thrive? Thruff?
No.
Fluffington Post.
Fluffington? I will fluff your pillow for you, darling.
Yes.
How about the Huffington Lost?
So can I just say that when you get to a certain age, it's normal that you don't sleep well? I'm just saying.
Maybe she could have seen a doctor about it.
Yeah.
Instead of starting a startup. Well,
you know what? You can't really knock it, right? She did pretty well the last time.
Yeah. And also, it's an important thing, everything she's talking about around rest and sleep and everything.
So. I would guess it's less that she's not having a good night's sleep and more because she sees that as a big opportunity, health and wellness.
Not to mention Verizon's come in and made her look redundant, and they're not going to put her on the board
it's
or anywhere
sad.
Important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And her ego's not going to take the battery and she's going to be out of there.
Like that, yep.
So when I was at AOL for 2.5 years, and you're currently there,
I am.
Did you ever really notice that she worked there? Because when she announced she was stepping down, I was shocked that she was still at all around. Like, that was my surprise. Because I felt none of her influence internally or anything like that. I did skip all corporate meetings, but...
That's called leadership. That's called leadership right there.
Really?
No.
Okay.
Build a machine that runs itself.
What does John Oliver call Huffington Post? He has a great name for it. The slice and dice and reuse... blog, because basically they don't write anything original.
Well, no, they do have actually a decent politics journalism.
They do.
Kind of like BuzzFeed News is actually very good, but it's in wrapped in this cocoon of other stuff.
Yep. According to Recode, why did Arianna leave The Huffington Post, it rhymes with Yahoo, darling. What rhymes with Yahoo? I have to think. This is, anyway.
It must be pretty sad for her to see her entire life's work reduced to an ad tech property, though.
It's really what it is, isn't it?
It is. Well, what Verizon's doing, Verizon's making $24 billion a year out of selling data about what traffic crosses their network to ad tech companies. That's today, right? It's a $24 billion market.
So
by buying the endpoint, they can now take that ad tech data and unify the users as it comes across the network and get better targeting. That's why Verizon's out there buying up all these content properties, not because they're
inherited. It's about
the users. It's because they've got better ad tech.
It's the ad
and
tech.
They can drive higher users. Yeah. It's not about the content. It's not about the companies. It's just about displaying ads.
I thought they were just sad about losing out on the old web, too. It's like, gotta get all the toys you could get the first time around. So
that AOL, it was so fun.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so cute.
Yeah, so cute.
I can't see anybody on the board of Verizon signing off because we missed out. We'll have another go.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's ad tech.
Well, that's life.
Makes them the third largest ad tech company behind Google and Facebook. They now have 5 to 6% of the market.
So they're really not a cell phone company anymore. That's not the business anymore. I don't blame them because I think that this is what you're seeing is a lot of companies, Comcast included, don't want to be pipes. Dumb pipes is not a long-term business strategy, mm-hmm. right? So Comcast bought NBC, Universal. Mm-hmm. They became a content company.
You need smart pipes.
Smart pipes, I guess. Yeah. And in fact, you see this horrible conflict of interest in the Olympics where you don't get, you're not experiencing this in the UK, but here in the United States, because NBC owns the rights mm-hmm. to the Olympics and Comcast owns NBC, mm-hmm. it is a terrible nexus, I think. Mm. Of content plus distribution. We broke up the movie theaters, used to own all the movie companies, and we broke that up years ago because it was so anti-competitive.
That has to change. Like, for example, so I'm here from the UK, and in the UK my cell phone has an unlimited plan. So that means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I can draw data all the way down. And what I'm now doing, I can now take that phone over here and I get unlimited data when I'm here. So I don't pay roaming charges. It's just part of the plan. Whoa. The company just gave...
And what sorcery is this?
Yeah, that sounds like magic.
Tell me more.
How could that happen? Well, actually, Google Fi does that, right?
My guess is that...
It's not unlimited. Google
Fi company in the UK,
same price, though.
So the company in the UK...
Three?
Yeah.
Mm.
And basically...
So Google has a deal with Three for Google Fi.
Do you know how much it costs to collect the accounting data to do that? It's huge sums. Hundreds of millions of dollars in accounting systems and interconnection.
Because they don't probably there's an impedance mismatch.
Yeah, you have to get the data records from. Yeah. So when I was working for a large mobile phone carrier, we had to set up.
You have inside information.
Yeah, we used to have to set up these massive pipes for the accounting data to change, and we used to interchange. And what used to happen was we'd count all of the calls that Verizon phones were on our network, and then they would count all the minutes that were on ours, and when there was a discrepancy, we had to reconcile them, and then somebody paid each other. Do you know how much it cost? Like tens of millions of dollars. And I think
that's why data roaming is so expensive.
Yes. The actual cost of it is nothing, because the internet traffic doesn't get backhauled back to the UK and then go out of the internet. It just routes out internet.
Right.
Verizon has all those internet exchange points.
It's
costs them zero. It's just straight out arbitrage. If I charge you $10 to join Twit, and then you charge me $10, paid me $10 to appear here, who's winning?
Right. Right.
Right. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Right.
Right. It's a straight out arbitrage deal. And what Three's basically, what I suspect, this is speculation, is they're just saying, why am I spending all this money on accounting? Why don't I just call it squids and just say, whenever you're in these countries, it's just whatever you're planning.
Google Fi, that was the big announcement here, is that Google Fi will charge the same amount in a partnership with Three, among other carriers. We're in 19 other countries. So similar, we don't have unlimited data. It's $10 mm-hmm. a gigabyte. But that's actually as good a deal as far as I'm concerned.
If we just agreed to stop charging each other for data, what's the big deal? It's not like it's a massive problem, right? Because think how much money you've saved in handling the records, adding them to your bill, counting up the pack. Like how many customers are ringing up, whinging and bitching about, you've just charged me.
My iPhone says I used 100 megabytes. You say I used 400. Yeah. That happened to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't match what your phone says.
And they're charging you $7 a meg or $5 a meg.
It's awful,
right? Unhappy customers. Why don't you just, grow up and
go,
you know
what? What's wrong with the medical system in this country is something like a huge percentage. I don't remember the exact number, so I won't quote it. But a huge percentage of medical costs in this country goes to administrative costs for similar reasons.
Yeah.
It's the cost of billing, the cost of figuring out. Yeah. It's the insurance costs. It's just crazy.
Yeah. We have the same problem in technology.
So why don't we just stop charging for everything?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what T-Mobile was kind of working towards with their like roaming stuff.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. Like I've taken that to Barcelona, I've taken it to Taiwan, and it's 2G, 3G speed.
Although sometimes it's faster, right?
Yeah, sometimes it speeds up, but it's enough for you to like find a location
T-Mobile
on the map.
T-Mobile still tries
something.
To get you, at least this is my experience, to buy faster packages.
I mean, if you really
every
need
day
it,
I got a text
that
says, you want to buy a pass, you can buy a pass for faster package. But you're right. It's nice just to have some.
Yeah. You're not totally.
And Sprint has responded in the U.S. with a similar package. Their One World package is similar. So that's where competition makes a huge difference.
For
and, of course, AT&T and Verizon don't have to do anything because they're wonderful.
They have a government-mandated monopoly.
Monopoly.
And, of course, they don't donate anything to the political process.
All right. I you know what? You guys are so great. I'm letting you talk about anything you want. You said there was something. Did you say, Alex, that there was something you wanted to talk about?
No.
Moving right
always
along.
The slacker. You must be a millennial.
No.
Wow.
I mean,
how dare you, sir?
I was trying to not talk about the competition get better. Now you're bringing me back
up. Oh, no. Sorry. No. I'm just kidding. Actually, you could talk about that T-shirt because Jet. Turns out no one else was bidding for Jet. Walmart's bid itself up? How did it get to that?
Akin to goods on Jet.com. Jet sold for a discount. Yeah. Or, well, not entirely. It was a multiple of its last valuation. But,
okay. $3 billion. Apparently, they're paying to Mark Lohr to lock him in.
That's the general idea, is that it's kind of a very expensive acquihire because the company, as it currently stands, loses, I think, on the order of about $40 million a month.
To Amazon.
No, just they lose that much money.
Oh, operating. Jet does.
Jet does, yes.
Oh, yeah, Jet was always a non-starter, I thought.
Well, I agree, but other people didn't agree and gave them hundreds of millions of dollars.
So those of you, wrong. And that means almost all of you who never used Jet, it was an Amazon. Yeah, you used it?
No.
But you have a T-shirt.
They sent them to the TechCrunch office. I just happened to have one.
I actually said this before, and I think a couple of people emailed me and said, no, I used Jet once. I tried to use Jet. The idea was an Amazon competitor, but it wasn't clear initially they were going to charge a fee like Costco did just to buy.
$50 a year.
That was a non-starter. They dubbed that, right? Then they promised with their ads that they would shrink prices with a special gun.
So, honey, I shrunk the brands, I guess. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah. You cannot go into Amazon's backyard and beat Amazon. Baidu can beat Amazon in China.
Sure.
Not Baidu. What's the...
Alibaba.
Alibaba can beat Amazon in China. In fact, Alibaba might make a credible run at the Amazon in the U.S., but I don't think
I don't agree with that statement.
I think Amazon Prime owns it.
I think the markets are just too radically different.
Yes, that's the problem.
If you've ever seen a Chinese website, it's just this, it looks like Big Bird and the Cookie
it's
Monster
in Chinese. That's the problem.
On your screen, and it's full of blinky, flashy.
I've tried to buy stuff from Alibaba, and I agree.
Yeah.
It looks like a junk store.
It's not the MySpace of Amazon.
Something like it. Ugh. But, it's very attractive
to that
market.
It's cultural.
It's that thing. And
it's not made for us.
There was a blog post. There was an article this week in one of the press things saying
this is not the
there are Chinese companies who are actually building startups for the Western world and being quite successful in the Western world, but unable to translate them into Chinese properties. And there are equally Chinese companies who tried to bust into the, the global markets and have been spectacularly unsuccessful. I think it was Alibaba who hired like a big football star to do a whole big push. They spent like $300 million on a marketing push and it just disappeared.
It's hard. It really is hard to cross those cultural. And, Apple's learning that in China. Their sales have tailed off, haven't they?
Uber just learned the same lesson.
And Uber pulled out and let Didi have it, right?
Well, for a nice chunk of the company.
Yeah.
I'll pull out for a nice chunk.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, it's not me.
What? Yeah.
It's not
what?
Me.
What? Yeah. What?
This kid in the middle.
I've heard people say
whack
that.
People say that.
No, I don't
know.
Well, they
don't
say
know.
With
I
a,
might
with
be
a,
wrong.
With a
I
twinkle
don't know.
In their eye. That's not okay. There are children here.
Anyway, what was we were talking about Amazon and Jet. We were
the Walmart acquisition of Jet's properties, operations, and IP.
Yeah. Yes. So $3 billion for Mark Lohr. Now, he created diapers.com.
The holding company that owned diapers.com and other brands that was sold to Amazon.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. And it's a great story, which you can read in the Anything store. As soon as Jeff Bezos saw diapers.com coming, he immediately undercut them completely. Mm-hmm. And then when their value started to plummet, said, hey, I'll take it. I'm sure Zappos is a similar story.
Tony wouldn't quite phrase it in
maybe
those
not.
Terms.
Maybe
but,
not. And Zappos, unlike diapers.com, has been able to run autonomously under
Yes,
Amazon.
But I don't think Jet's remains will be independent inside of Walmart because they'll be part of the larger corporate Walmart brand.
What Walmart needed was a digital strategy, a way to survive in a digital era.
I agree entirely. But why do you have to buy Mark Lohr for $3.3 billion?
Well, that's the question. Is Mark Lohr the
messiah?
Have you guys been to Walmart's website?
I haven't.
Is it terrible?
It's not. I mean, it's a basic store.
There's not even a Walmart in town.
You know what they need on the Walmart website?
Walmart.com.
They need the People of Walmart Tumblr.
It's a pretty basic store. It kind of looks like...
Hey, look, I'm just saying. You
know, it's a Chromebook on Walmart.com.
Yeah, $179 bucks. Get the tech for your student.
All right.
If they mixed the People of Walmart... See, you go to Walmart because you want to see the People of Walmart. If they mixed the People of Walmart into the website... There you go.
That's what's going on
there
here.
You go. I don't know. People of Walmart. They're different. They're unusual.
Oh, you're on the blog? Yeah.
This
is
the Tumblr, peopleofwalmart.com.
Yeah, be careful where you scroll here, Leo.
Their lines are
dangerous real quickly.
It's going to get worse.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to try that one.
When you look at this blog, don't you just get the sense that your life is just not as interesting as theirs?
I go to Walmart to keep my life interesting.
That guy looks like a Mad Max / Burning Man cast off.
I know. Yeah. And apparently Ozzy Osbourne shops.
There's 2,150 pages on that.
Oh, it's a lot. There's a lot.
There's a lot of it, yeah.
There's a lot there.
If you have a late night by yourself, you can always turn to People of Walmart.
Yeah. Walmart.
I think partly the Jet acquisition was triggered by the numbers. So Walmart is now smaller than Amazon.
Yep.
So or Walmart as the physical stores, and they announced that they're shutting like 100 stores, 150 stores. Sears is equally bad.
Sears exists.
Yeah.
They're cutting hundreds of stores.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Sears used to, in San Francisco, have a big store. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. I used to go there all the time. And I think it's a bowling alley now.
Yep.
But there is still a Sears somewhere. It's not in San Francisco.
It's part of the research, if you read up about what Jet.com and why they acquired them, is literally Walmart needs to react to Amazon. And they've been trying to organically build. They built up a very strong IT infrastructure team. And the value of Jet is that its infrastructure can weld. It doesn't need can lift straight out of Amazon into Walmart's IT infrastructure.
Why is it so hard to build this stuff? You'd think this would be kind of by now.
It's not hard to build it. It's the time. So Walmart to build it from
cheaper and faster to just buy Jet and
they need to act now and not let Amazon get. If they were to build it, it would take 3 to 5 years.
The reason I ask that is you would think Apple, with more than $200 billion in the bank, for instance, could create a cloud services that worked. And yet, there must be something hard to do about it.
Apple's problem is that they're working at such unbelievable scale. Right?
Yeah, but so is Facebook. So is Google. So is, not Yahoo.
Yeah.
Yahoo actually is.
Speaking of scale, Walmart had 4 times the sales of Amazon in the last quarter. Mm. So
they aren't smaller.
No, yep. Walmart's about $115 billion, $116, and Amazon was just over $30 billion in revenue.
But they're seen as, online they're much smaller.
Online certainly, but aggregate
and
scale.
They see the end of the brick and mortar.
I'm talking about growth. If you take the growth numbers, you'll see that Walmart is shrinking while Amazon's growing.
Oh, yeah, I can see the charts. I'm right here.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what he does for a living.
So the answer is, the problem with Apple is it's just so unbelievably at scale. If you're looking at what they did with iCloud Drive, they didn't do that for 5 million users or 10 million users. They did that for like 1.5 billion
people.
Here
it's like 3 years in and it still doesn't work very well.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually finding iCloud Drive is working. I've just switched all my, the bulk of my sync out of it into iCloud Drive.
Oh, you are a brave man.
And steadily away from Dropbox. I've got all three. I can't continue to manage Dropbox, iCloud Drive.
That is a brave
and
man.
Google Drive. But Google Drive is awful.
Yeah, but the Apple Maps
the Google
works,
Drive app
right?
is abysmally bad.
I feel like Apple's team can really improve stuff over time.
Mm-hmm. It's an absolute...
What's bad with Google? What's bad about it?
The app crashes after 2.5 minutes. Then it stops syncing on my Mac. I think you're driving it wrong. And it takes ages for the Google Drive to sync.
We use Google Drive all the time. Do we have problems with Google Drive?
I still have issues.
What are you doing with Google? Oh, you're syncing...
Gigabytes of data. Not Google Docs or not Google Sheets.
I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So we have to sync our podcasts. You know, when we record a podcast, we drop the files in and send them off.
Yeah.
And Google Drive is just, that's a fail.
That's probably not the best way to do that. Yeah,
yeah, but it's, I mean, they're not doing it right either.
Right.
Right? So
it's hard to do.
So if you're going to point the finger at Apple, you got
to
point the finger at Google.
Yeah.
Amazon's got a syncing, a volume drive syncing engine, and nobody uses that for the same reasons. It works pretty bad.
But you guys were asking, why is it so hard for Apple?
Why is it so hard?
It almost seems like they constantly underestimate the work involved. It's not just, the scale and the resource and everything. It's let's just get into Maps.
And that was a disaster. Right. And then we heard this week, the Maps fiasco led to the public testing for iOS.
Eddie Q said that in the interview.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Singularly devoid of any information except for that.
Mm-hmm. But that was a moment of real honesty that I appreciated.
Yeah.
As an Apple observer, but not somebody who knows the company that well, I have no insight into how they operate because they're notoriously private. But that was them saying, here's a problem we had, here's how we fixed it, which is a big tidbit for Apple.
They said as a result of the failure of Apple Maps, they decided to do public betas going forward, and they have, and they've done, I think, a better job of the updates. iOS 10 is probably arguably in better shape than any version of iOS
prior.
For sure.
It's fantastic.
How long was Gmail in beta? Do we recall?
It's still in beta.
It's still
No, it was almost 10 years.
That joke was funny, though, for a while.
It was almost 10 years. It was a long time.
So if you look
That's just a badge.
Yeah. No, but it's always just a badge.
What does that mean?
It's alpha and beta are valued decisions by people making the product.
Mm-hmm. It almost after a year, it really says, we just don't have that much confidence in this product, so
we shouldn't work enough. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone loved Gmail. So.
Yeah. I mean, I've built infrastructures like what Apple's doing with iCloud, and it's not easy. And Apple made some mistakes in the early days. They bought off the shelf from existing vendors. They bought TerraMark for storage.
They were using Azure, as far as I know. I think they're still using
Azure. They use all different cloud services. Yeah. A lot of the iCloud photos is done off Google at the moment. Uh-huh. Some stuff comes off Azure, and a lot of stuff comes off Amazon, in addition to what they're using. And the challenge is that they can't scale up fast enough. They can't build data centers fast enough. They've
Maybe
also
they
got a problem
stop trying
with...
to push people into using iCloud so hard. Then,
well, the challenge here is that if you're going to put a billion users onto something, you need a couple of data centers, and they take 10 years to go through buying the land, getting the approvals, to getting through the
that
local
does
account,
make sense. Right? That and does make sense when you're talking about infrastructure like that. That takes a while to get.
And then what they did was to keep moving at speed because Apple was moving quite quickly a few years ago. They were outsourcing the tech. They were going and buying it from other people and letting those suppliers, you know, like integrators, come and provide those services.
Yeah.
And those companies didn't do a very good job because they couldn't do it at scale. Apple's now turned it around and started developing all of that infrastructure themselves in the same way that Google, Amazon, and Facebook do, and they're starting to reap the rewards of that.
Who does it best, in your opinion? Is it Amazon?
Probably Facebook.
Facebook?
Yes.
Facebook does seem to be pretty reliable. But you don't sync gigabytes of data to your Facebook cloud.
No, but Facebook does for you. They hit it. But Facebook's ability is in its ability to change its platform. Yeah. To me, it's Amazon does a great job, but that website is a usability disaster. It's like a dog vomited straight onto your webpage. Like if you want to go and buy a pair of glasses, how do you go shopping for a pair of glasses unless you know exactly what the product is? It's like going diving through a dumpster,
right?
And the chances that you're
kind of like Alibaba.
Yeah.
Even the search is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On Amazon.
And so going shopping on Amazon's great as long as you know what it is that you want.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's like shopping at Costco. It's somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the similarities between Amazon and Costco aren't exactly unknown to me. But, you know, they're striking. They're absolutely the same business models.
I almost wonder if they're spending more time on their mobile apps than their website at this point when it comes to usability. Because it's so much easier just to pull up the app and, like, get something and finish an order
rather
than...
And it makes sense. That's how they probably want people to shop and people who want to shop, right?
Yeah.
And that may be part of Walmart's decision, too, for Jets. I don't know how much Jet had in terms of mobile experience, but, you know, Walmart, for places that have Walmarts, you know, anybody who needs to go to the store, they say, I'm going to go to Walmart because that's the place you go to get stuff. Now you're buying stuff online, you go to Amazon because that's the only place most people go unless you want like specialized hardware or something. So if Amazon wants to compete on that level, they need better infrastructure.
This is a classic challenge, though, is taking a brick-and-mortar business and moving it to the cloud.
Maybe, but
few have done this successfully.
Yeah, Just Thing, too, was also about discounting items. And Walmart has that whole idea of being cheap. So if they can combine those brand features, that could be interesting.
You think they have a chance?
So that's my question. What is the chance that Walmart actually pulls off a reasonable Amazon competitor, not number one, but actually a viable long-term brand that people use after the Jet acquisition? I don't think it's that likely. Not to be negative. But
how loyal are people to Amazon? If you suddenly found a good experience that offered a good price, wouldn't you be willing to shift? I don't think I'd have a problem buying from another store.
Right, but I don't think they'll pull off that level of service.
They have to do that.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be the threshold required to. I don't really like Amazon that much. I use it because it works, right? There's no other Amazon equivalent.
Well, also, we're bought into it. We gave them $100 so we'd have Amazon Prime, right? We've kind of committed to it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's the perception still that Amazon has the lowest prices, which I think is in fact not true.
Sometimes they do. It's more about guarantee of service, too. Like, if I need this cable or something tomorrow or even today.
Right.
Like Amazon has enough options. I know I can trust Amazon to get me that.
That's actually the big selling point. And that's why those fulfillment centers are so important. The infrastructure, the logistics. And in fact, you might say that Amazon is a logistics business.
Slave labor.
Well, so is went dark. But so is Walmart in a lot of ways. I mean, they piloted using satellites to track trucks.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They have RFID in all their products. And, I mean, they're very smart about how
Walmart squeezes money out of their supply chain very efficiently, which is how they have profit margins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So more power to them.
Yeah, but Amazon's holding a lot less stock now. So they've moved away from holding stock, and they're much more about just selling the goods. So Amazon doesn't want to keep building its stores. What it wants to do is be a platform so that when you go to shop, you pay your $100 a year, and that's what they make the money. They don't actually want to make a profit on selling the goods as much as they want that $100 a year out of your pocket. That's why they give away movies, give away Kindle books basically as part of the package, because if you could get a billion people paying you $100 a year to use my platform, what have I just done?
Created a $100 billion recurring revenue stream.
Now, if I don't have to run the warehouses and don't have to pay for the stock in the warehouses, the people who manufacture the goods put the stock in my warehouses or maybe ship it directly but using my distribution system, then all of a sudden my mechanics are, I'm making $100 billion for what? Running a website.
In 5 years, is it going to be Walmart and Amazon? Is there anybody else? Is Target in the mix?
No.
Not really.
So
Target
really,
got hacked and their stores don't work.
Yeah.
So really it's going to be Amazon and Walmart. I mean, maybe Walmart.
Target's hack doesn't matter. That's trivial.
That doesn't stop people from using them.
No, not at all. No. In fact, their share price is up like 80% since the hack occurred.
The only reason you go to Target is to walk into a slightly nicer Walmart. That's all. Yeah. That's the only reason.
Is it?
It's Target.
It's a slightly nicer Walmart, really? Yeah. We don't have a Walmart
lighting
around
is better.
Here. That's why I don't know.
Yeah.
Lighting is better?
Lighting is better.
Yep. Okay.
Same cheap prices, but there's a little more style there.
Huh. The chat room is loving this, by the way. It's amazing.
Devendra is right on, says it.
Right. God, Greg is good. Keep coming back, man.
And who? Wilhelm? Who? Alex? Who?
Oh, no, they don't like me.
No. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. I do want to talk about a lot of other things. You guys, I think you're doing such a good job. You should pick the stories you want to come back with. So that's your assignment while the rest of us will talk about Audible.com. And if you want to talk about Audible, you can too. But it is very distracting. Whenever I talk about Audible, we all end up talking about our favorite audiobooks. I spend so much time listening to books on Audible.com. I've been an Audible subscriber long before they became an advertiser, although they have been the longest advertiser, I think one of the longest advertisers on Twit. For almost 10 years, I think 8 years, something like that. I've been an Audible subscriber for 16 years, hundreds of books. I love Audible, and I think you will too. It is the world's largest audio bookstore, 250,000 titles, and not just novels, but fiction, nonfiction, college courses, everything you would want to listen to. Audible.com. If you go to audible.com/twit2, we're going to set you up with a platinum plan. This is free for the first month. It'll give you 2 books or 2 credits. Some of the really long books, a few, 0.1% are long enough so that they're 2 credits. But you'll get to use those 2 credits towards any book or books you want. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, yours to pick every single day. And then after a month, you have to make the decision, do I keep going or not? But if you decide to cancel, you'll have paid nothing. Those 2 books will be yours to keep forever. It's a great way to try something. I know maybe some of you are going, do I want to listen to audiobooks? What will it be like? Trust me, I love them. I'm, as you can tell, an Audible fanatic. Listen all the time. I've been getting my son to listen, too. We were talking about Henry earlier, my college kid son. He says, I want to learn. I said, you got to read. He said, I got to get sleepy. I read. And he said, listen to Audible. And he really loves audiobooks now. He's listened to a lot of audiobooks. Go to audible.com/twit2 and pick a book or two. You'll get them for free for the first 30 days. Enjoy it and let me know what you think. I think you're going to become an Audible fanatic. audible.com/twit2. If you're a New York Times subscriber, you probably got The Underground Railroad. Last week it came in the Sunday Times, a fairly long excerpt. It was kind of a neat deal. It's maybe because it's the return of the Oprah Book Club. It's her first book pick in some time. Brand new book by Colson Whitehead. That's also on Audible. So if you read the New York Times excerpt and you want to read more, you could buy the book, but you'll get every word brought to life. That's the best thing about audiobooks. At audible.com. And this could be yours free, The Underground Railroad. Audible.com/twit2. Try it today. We're talking about the week's tech news. Alan Malventano's here. You were here for the, what is it, FMS?
Flash Memory Summit.
So what is that?
So it used to be 2-3 years ago and before that, anything that had to do with solid-state drives developments was typically announced at the Consumer Electronics Show.
Right.
In January.
Right.
Right, in Vegas. And over the past few years, that whole storage subsection, like flash memory related or anything solid-state storage related, has kind of shifted to what's called the Flash Memory Summit, which is actually down here.
Ah.
At the convention center.
So, because this was, because IBM's facility in the South Bay, wasn't that where they were doing their SSD, their very famous
probably
SSD
developing the way early stuff.
Yeah. And then Intel, of course, was the leader in SSDs for a while. So it makes sense. Silicon Valley would be kind of where you would want to.
That's where a lot of the development is. A lot of the
although isn't Samsung now kind of the leader in SSDs at this point?
And they fly right over here.
They just come over
and they do keynotes. And Samsung frequently has their own what they just call an SSD summit, and they do that in Seoul.
Right.
And they I've probably been out there 4 or 5 times by now to cover announcements from them. But they also do announcements at the Flash Memory Summit here.
It's funny because in the early days of Flash, you had the whole chart. There were all sorts of questions.
The SSD decoder.
The SSD decoder. It was very complicated depending on what firmware.
Well, I gave up. There were too many SSDs to put
But on. Also, I think what's happened is they've become commoditized now. And now the main brands are all pretty good, I would guess.
No.
No? There are significant differences?
There are. And I ended up having to develop new testing just to show those differences.
What are the differences?
Better.
Speed, reliability, what are the...
You'll end up running into... most of it boils down to the flash itself is typically fine. It's just how the manufacturers implement their firmware.
Right. So it's still VEC. That was the big issue for a long time.
It's all about managing how the flash is written to, because it's kind of like a musical chair problem.
Like wear leveling and...
Yeah, you have to do wear leveling. You can't write... very small, random to it continuously because it likes being written in large or erased in large chunks, relatively large chunks. Huh. Like flash memory, the analogy I usually use is it's like a bunch of little CDRWs.
Right.
Remember a CDRW? Yeah. If you filled it and you wanted to erase a file or overwrite a file, you had to basically copy the whole thing off, wipe the whole disk, and start over.
Right.
Mm. Flash has to do that in 6 megabyte chunks.
Oh.
So you can't just do very small random writes to it continuously. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes jockeying and juggling around of data that happens that you are completely unaware of. It just all happens. Like, there's an SSD in that system. It's doing that right now.
That's why we have SSDs with 8 gigabytes of DRAM on board.
Sure.
So they can swap this 8 gigs out.
So they have cache RAM. So they actually the DRAM actually acts as a multi-tier cache inside the SSD. It also gives them read-write space so that you can actually... juggle it and hold it before you write it down. And that DRAM is actually battery-backed. So if the drive depowers, all the memory is actually...
It's also part of the problem, the fact that operating systems don't know about... They still think in terms of cylinders and sectors and all of this stuff.
It's all obfuscated now.
It's all hidden,
it's just
right?
a sector number that you're writing to. Mm. And that's
so the OS is no longer are the problem.
That's not really the problem, especially with NVMe and newer technologies that are just designed for...
So NVMe is very exciting. So it does away with the whole SATA... SCSI blocks and sectors, it starts to say, I want to pull
it's
a block of data.
It's an address.
Well, you remember the old SCSI protocol, which is basically fetch this block.
Right.
And you serially fetch block after block.
Right.
NVMe says, I need this data blob. And the drive then hands it and just give it to me. So they remove all of the SCSI.
You worry about where it is.
Yeah.
But in some way, the intelligence has moved now into the drive, right?
And it's in both.
It's in both, yeah. So NVMe simplifies the protocol between the operating system and the drive fetch. And then the drive itself decides how it wants to do its own housekeeping. But what, Alex, we should probably talk about 3D NAND and what's going to happen when
it's
get
actually,
the real innovation.
Did they make some announcements at FMS about that?
Samsung did.
Okay.
So Samsung's been iterating on their 3D NAND, 3D VNAND, since it came out a few years ago. And there was actually 24-layer VNAND, which was version 1, but nobody saw it in any consumer parts. It was just kind of a dry
run. Okay, you're going to have to explain to me, is this like RAM or stacked RAM and 24 layers of it? What does that mean?
Okay, so there's different ways of stacking things. There was actually somebody tweeted at me earlier today, and they were kind of confused on what does this mean? Does this mean I'm putting 64 dies stacked on top of each other within the package?
What does it mean? Yeah.
No, this is actually...
Within a single die.
64 now, announced at the show, 64 layers worth of cells that are each storing charge to store data.
Okay.
Okay.
Does that mean it's denser?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because if you're able to go vertical, that reduces some of the limitations of what used to be the issue. Actually, if you scroll down a little bit.
And
on
how
that,
do you address this? Is it addressed in XYZ?
It's still the similar kind of addressing. It's sort of like an X and Y, like a row and a column kind of a thing.
Yeah, but now you've got depth. So what do you?
It's obfuscated.
It's just a big row.
You don't address like okay. a specific height
I
or
see.
Whatnot.
All right. Okay.
But there's actually a cutaway if you scroll down a little more on the page of what that stuff looks like. I think. Or no, they already passed it. It was further up. Anyway.
So you can actually see into the die.
Yeah, is there's a cross section. Yeah. So that's a cross-section of, I think, 48-layer. When that came out, the guys at Tech Insights always, like, cut dies in half and do electron microscope stuff and look at it, right? So what you're looking at is just rows worth of NAND cells.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And so in this case, that Samsung frequently runs that in TLC mode. So each one of those little squares, right, is holding 3 bits. Of data.
Okay.
All right. And then you multiply that out and you end up with...
So what this means is we're going to get more capacity in the same space?
Yes. And along those that same exact vein, last year at Flash Memory Summit, we saw 16 gigabyte, 2.5-inch form factor SSD for enterprise from Samsung. And then this year they showed that same exact product.
Sorry, just ignore that. That's my, I don't know why my phone is talking to me.
So we saw that same exact product. It almost looked like nothing had changed at all. However, they had now the double capacity per die of this new 64-layer flash inside that drive, so they were able to double the capacity of that SSD.
So how big is a 3.5-inch SSD?
Two and a half.
How much is that going to hold?
In Samsung's case, 32 terabytes now.
32 terabytes?
Mm. Sorry, if I said gigabytes before, but it was
32 terabytes.
It was 16 terabytes last year, 32 terabytes
number.
This year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big number for a 2.5-inch.
In the same size as my 950 Evo now?
No.
Oh.
It's a little, 850 Evo, but it's a little thicker.
A little thicker.
Yeah.
God forbid the 850 Evo.
You had me until you said that.
That was a solid 9,000 worth of
energy. I think the most interesting storage is coming out is the new Intel Optane with the NVDIMM.
Yes. Right? So, Intel's branding is Optane. Micron announced their branding as QuantX at the show.
Now, the key feat about this memory is that it's permanent.
Yeah.
So, unlike flash, which is you ride it and then...
That's permanent, too.
Well, it is, but
not forever
NVDIMM,
permanent.
Our speed is 100 times faster than SSDs.
Yeah.
So now it actually replaces DRAM, and you can start to read and write directly from your hard drive.
This is the stuff called Crosspoint.
Crosspoint. 3D Crosspoint.
3D Crosspoint.
Well, aren't I reading and writing directly from a hard drive right now?
Nope. I like LAMP.
Okay.
You're looking at the wrong side of the table, dude.
So
I want to be on this side of the table.
Think about it this way. Today you have an iPhone, it has a CPU. Yeah. Your smartphone has a CPU, it has DRAM, and it has SSD.
Yeah, I understand what if I DRAM could, and then so, storage. What if so I could, memory and storage.
Uh-huh. So what if I could replace my DRAM with a permanent storage?
So it's as fast as DRAM?
It's about 10 times slower than DRAM, 100 times slower than DRAM, but 1,000 times faster than an SSD.
So that's where
how's it going to be treated as DRAM or just really fast storage?
Well, that's what we don't know. This is where microkernels come in.
That's the thing. We're on the ground floor of this as far as it's a new type of memory. If this stuff came out 15 or 20 years ago, that laptop would be architected completely differently than it was right now.
But I could tell. But I mean, one way you could sell it is you're going to have 10 times faster hard drives.
Yeah, and actually, that's what we saw at the show. Micron showed a prototype, and they actually showed some results, some actual test results of.
But the problem is we're connecting our hard drives via buses that are saturated as it is.
Think about it with IoT. You're talking 50 billion devices in IoT by 2020,
and they don't have to be as fast as DRAM. They could do, and so you could have.
So why would you have DRAM and an SSD? Why not just have something that's permanent storage, but closer to the speed of DRAM?
Got it.
And then it clocks out. Now think about the savings in battery power if you've got a 500 gigabyte NVDIMM, 3D Crosspoint type stuff.
Yeah.
Then you don't have a hard drive, you don't have DRAM, and you've just got a CPU.
So it sounds like the PC architecture is about to change dramatically.
Yes.
To take advantage of this, it would have to.
Yeah.
So it's out now, or it's Intel plans to
ship. So basically everything you just bought is obsolete.
Well, Not really. It's going to hit enterprise first.
We didn't mention this is going to be horrifically expensive, probably, right?
No, it's not reassuringly expensive. If it's not expensive, it's not worth having.
It's going to sit between NAND flash, which is what's in your SSD, and DRAM. Mm-hmm. It's going to sit between those two, and it performs between those two.
You know, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. We always think of Moore's law as applying to computation.
Yeah.
But there is also a very, it's not exponential probably, but there's a very fast growth rate in storage capabilities, in capacity and speed.
It's not just it's not just the storage capacity, that's true. There's also, if you start to take away DRAM, like temporary RAM at high speed, and low speed permanent storage, SSDs, and replace them with a single module, merge it, then you've actually simplified the operating system, so your power consumption drops off by an order of
magnitude. You don't save files anymore.
And then we start to use NVMe, which is a way more efficient access protocol. So instead of fetching the data from the SSDs as blocks, which means we have to emulate the blocks in software on the drive. So now there's a CPU and 8 gigabytes of RAM on the
if I can it's a do little computer.
All of a sudden, I've got. So I was wanting to talk to you a little bit about 5G and the upcoming changes to the network. So we talked about 4G.
Don't get us on the 5G now. That's going to be a whole other thing. So we'll get there, but okay.
Well, what we're heading towards is devices that run for 10 years on a single battery charge that are connected to the 5G network.
That's interesting. And we were talking about the Google stuff too, like Fuchsia as well. Like that, a computer in 10
now
years.
Now it all kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah. There's a convergence play going on. Operating systems are getting smaller. The technology inside of our computers, you know, storage is changing, which means we need new operating systems that don't rely on reading and writing to DRAM and then flushing to disk.
You know? So what does that world look like now where we have – I mean, it really does facilitate the idea of the distribution of computing power to small devices all over, intelligent devices everywhere.
So
we've got machine learning now and capabilities to make these devices more autonomous, more intelligent. Able to kind of operate. In fact, this really facilitates the autonomous device in some ways.
I think the way I look at it, I'm a networking professional, so my main job is, you know, how does the network connect things together? And I see what today we have most of our computers are personal things. Your computer talks to my computer. I talk to my server in the cloud.
Right.
I talk to Facebook. Right. That's person to person or person to machine. IoT is much more focused on business to machine or machine to machine. So today, you have no sensors in this building monitoring temperature except for cooling, right? Why?
We have thermostats everywhere. John is very defensive about his studio. Don't attack his studio.
But imagine if you had a sensor on every door so you could track every time it opened.
Right.
And if you had sensors at every point throughout the building tracking the temperature and also light sensors and then also motion sensors, and you had a software platform that could bring all that together and say, there's been no motion in this room, I'll turn the cooling down and turn the lights off. And I'll also lock the doors because there's nobody in the building.
Right.
You'll open the pod bay doors too.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, today we don't do
or
that.
Or not.
And today we don't do that because linking the networks up between the cooling system and the lighting system.
Actually, it's the weirdest thing in the world because my Tesla has some of this. When I walk away, you don't turn your Tesla off or lock it. You just get out of the car and walk away. And it knows what you've done, and it locks itself.
And it communicates back to Tesla. It uploads data.
And by the
way,
Tesla knows what it's done as well. Exactly.
That's
right.
And there's a new form of Ethernet inside of cars. So they're using there's a 1 gig.
They're finally replacing CAN bus with something.
There's a new version of Ethernet called Car Ethernet. Designed to run in electrically noisy environments, et cetera, et cetera. It's all been ratified and tested out. And the new bus is now just Ethernet. So you're now running Intel CPUs. And
I didn't realize how noisy the electric motors were. I can't have an AM radio in my Tesla because there's so much noise from the electric motors. So I hadn't even thought about that, but that's got to really impact the network as well, the data network as
well. Well, they're now moving to a standard. They're moving away from 10 meg Ethernet to 1 gig Ethernet. So you can now... And then putting sensors in the taillight. So if your taillight goes out, there's actually a sensor, that not in the bulb, but a separate light sensor to say your taillight is no longer lighting up.
Soon it'll be the bulb.
And soon it'll be – well, maybe it'll be the bulb. I'm not sure. But, you know, however you do it, we've got this whole sensor revolution. But what if I can start putting sensors out there that are just connecting to the 5G network? And there's new 5G standards like NB-IoT that are designed to be this very low power – literally use a CRT023, like, you know, those little tablet-sized batteries, little flat things, and run for a decade, run a sensor for a decade.
Wow.
And that's that machine-to-machine. They're talking 50 billion devices. Well, maybe 10 billion of those are battery-operated, or 20 or 30 billion, all pushing data off into the cloud. And so this is where these new memory architectures combine with the new ARM CPUs, these new low-power CPUs, to, you know, Raspberry Pi is the thin edge of that wedge. What if you could turn those into something even smaller, like a dime or a coin-sized computer that has a battery in it, and then, you know, connect, has a sensor built into that. So we're looking at things like silicon photonics, where you can build a laser straight into the CPU die, and now all of a sudden you've got a laser sensor built into something the size of a coin that you can just stick to the door.
Last week we had somebody on the new Screensavers who has a rice-sized, rice grain-sized computer with memory, CPU, storage, and battery.
Wow.
Size of a kernel of rice. You could eat it.
Wow.
Wouldn't be very tasty, but you could eat it.
Do you have to, is it, do you retrieve it afterwards? Like, is it expensive?
No. No, they're cheap.
Well, reusable computer.
Right now, they're making them kind of hand-making. So it's probably expensive. You would want to retrieve it afterwards.
Yeah, if I was eating it, I'd be hand-making it.
The idea is these could probably be very easily, sure made.
Yes.
What university was that? I'm trying to remember where we were talking to them. Mm. Anyways, it was very interesting.
So, like, all the privacy discussions we're having now around IoT.
It's moot.
We're laying the groundwork because in 10 years, it's going to be insane.
It's everywhere.
It's going to be madness. Mm-hmm.
Sensors everywhere.
Yeah.
Yep. And I guess that's why we have IPv6 as well, because we're going to need all those addresses.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of interesting, too, because I remember reading like Kurzweil back in the 90s and Michio Kaku and those folks, the futurists, who always expected that everything would be microchips, you know, by 2020-something. Mm-hmm. And it's funny seeing the groundwork being laid to get us there. And terrifying.
Yeah. I would like to talk more about 5G, what it means, the future of 5G, how soon we're going to have 5G. That's something I think a lot of people...
That's like a whole show, honestly. The race to 5G.
I know. I think
something.
It is. Yep. Yeah. The race to 5G. And what even... What even 5G means. Mm-hmm. It was the University of Michigan, and we talked to David Blau, and it was a... this is the computer you see on a quarter.
Mm. Oh, nice.
It's the size of... It's smaller than the word Liberty on a quarter. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable.
Well,
pretty,
I think, amazing stuff. So one of the things that we had listed to talk about here is why Apple's MacBooks are so far behind the curve. Right?
Well, let's talk about that in a bit. That's something we can all talk about.
unlike the last 10 minutes in which this part of the table was silent.
Yeah.
Because
we were just looking at each other.
There's
like,
nothing that could have added to that. That would have been creative.
No, but, you understood it, and I think it's fantastic. It's fascinating, isn't it? I mean,
I was... Better, no.
It's simple. Better, faster, cheaper.
Harder, like faster, better, stronger. Thank you, Kanye.
Combined storage and RAM. That is fascinating.
Yeah, and IoT clearly is a revolution that's about to happen, even though we really don't have the infrastructure to handle that.
It's funny because every IoT product I've tried at this point has completely failed on me.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I'm using a...
They're ultimately disappointing.
I don't know why. I'm using a Wemo air filter right now in my bedroom. Set a time schedule on the app. Come in the next day, it's running at not the right time.
Right.
A completely different time. Right. Look at the app, the time was changed. So, like, something is just not even working there. Well, yeah.
It is an interesting question. Weird. What's going to have to happen between this vision of the future and this current situation? Sucks. Where in the things that do work, maybe my doorbell works, my Hue lights work, but they don't interoperate well at all. The glue that holds them together is wonky stuff like if this, then that. We are in clearly a very primitive stage of all of this.
For sure.
And as usual, hardware is outpacing software. The capabilities of the hardware are rapidly
advancing. What I think is you're seeing a convergence of multiple advances, and you can start to plot a pathway forward.
Yeah.
And then you can then, you know, and people like Alex can then start to turn that into revenue predictions. How do we see that?
Right.
And where does the disruption occur? So if you look at a smartphone today, it's screen, CPU, DRAM, SSDs. What does it look like if suddenly you take the DRAM and the SSD out and replace it with a...
That's fascinating.
You know, with a 3D cross-point permanent memory storage. Yeah. Does that make it more efficient?
Right.
It might get a bit slower, but, you know, the power consumption might suddenly...
It also continues the trend really to move away from discrete CPU-based processing units to kind of a wider mesh intelligence.
Yes.
And sensor-driven mesh intelligence. And in that case, speed of any individual component may not be critical. If the speed of the network will be, however... And that's where I'm intrigued.
Well, 5G is, 5G is, it's not about speed. It's about much, much more than that.
Oh, all right.
It's just pervasiveness.
It's more than speed. Yeah. We'll talk about it in a bit. We're going to take a break right now. Greg Farrow, it's great to have you. It's wonderful to have you in studio from the Packet Pushers Network, packetpushers.net. He's the host of, is the show called The Packet Pushers?
Yeah, we have 4 channels doing different technologies. We talk about data networking.
Don't say 4chan, that's not good.
No. Okay.
Yeah, it's not, yeah.
But mainly we enter data networking and a bit of a news show, which is, as you might have guessed, I'm a little bit of a nerd. And we deep dive on the technology
Sounds good.
Side.
Sounds good.
And we also have a cloud-based show for those nice. Of you who are into that called Datanauts.
Packetpushers.net. Alan Malvitano is also here. Alan has a checkered past, but we won't hold them against him. Working for the NSA and a submariner. And you were a nuclear officer on the submarine?
No, not an officer.
You just handled the plutonium.
Carried it around.
Carried it around.
It was in my pocket.
Hit a special bag. Come on.
All I can say is he knows how to pronounce americium,
yeah.
Which is more than I can say for the rest of the panel.
Okay. I got it wrong once.
He's also a host on This Week in Computer Hardware, which is a great show on this network, Twitch, and writes regularly for PC Perspective.
Yep.
It's great to have you, Alan.
Thanks.
From Engadget, senior editor. Devinder Hardwar, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Have you got the Note 7 yet?
I've seen it. We have it in the office. Yeah. Chris Velasco's playing with it. It's a nice device.
Yeah, I want to talk. I just got the shipping notice, so I'll probably get it in the next few days.
It's very, very nice, excited. Although I think the idea of the Note is just kind of over.
We'll talk about that. Yeah. And then also about this very nice laptop you're using.
Yeah.
First laptop I've ever seen with an OLED screen.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah, really intriguing. And Alex Wilhelm, who is just some guy.
That's correct.
Came in off the street. We don't know who he is. No, he is, of course, a senior writer at Mattermark. He's editor-in-chief. Forget senior writer. It's the editor-in-chief, my friends.
He's the dude.
He's the dude at Mattermark.com.
You should get business cards with the dude on them.
The dude.
That would last about a week.
Dude abides.
I shall indeed.
Do they have a sense of humor over there? If you did that, like, you could be...
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I'm Chief Twit.
Sounds right.
Oh, so many jokes that are not appropriate for the show. It's amazing consistently how the show sets you up for jokes you can't make.
Yeah. Now you feel my pain.
Oh, I'm living inside
thank
your
you.
Bucket of...
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace, it makes it easy to create a beautiful, beautiful website that runs perfectly because they are the hosting service and they run the software. That means they always keep it up to date. They always keep it responsive. Whether you need a simple cover page, and they have a great cover page facility. That's how I got started with Squarespace. Or you're a photographer who needs a portfolio, or you're a blogger, or even a publication, or an online store. It's all built into Squarespace. You start with their amazing templates, designed not only by the best designers, but also by the best engineers. So the template is bringing to your site state-of-the-art engineering like web responsive design and e-commerce, all done beautifully within this aesthetic that you can completely control and make your own. Every site looks great. And it even if you have no skills at all, you can do it. Just drag and drop, point and click. But the nice thing about Squarespace is it goes deep. So if you really want to get deep into the CSS, you can. They even have blank templates you can design on. There's actually a very large group of developers who work with Squarespace. That's what we used for the artisanal agency site. Lisa wanted to have a gorgeous site. We went to Squarespace and they have a directory of all the people who can do this stuff. And for a very affordable price, we were able to get a gorgeous site designed that works exactly as she wants. And so do it yourself or get somebody to do it for you. You're going to get the website you deserve. They have new magazine styles templates. It'd be great for starting a publication. They include all the things publications, you know, make a big deal about. Grid style landing pages, infinite scroll, related posts at the bottom. You get author profile pages. There's even an integrated search field in the header so your readers can get right to the content they want right away. And, of course, as with all the websites, all the designs on Squarespace, mobile comes with it. So you don't have a separate mobile site. Your site looks great on any size screen. You'll get a free custom domain if you subscribe for a year. And they now have domain registrar capability. Over 200 TLDs, not just .com and .net, but all of the fun TLDs. So you can buy a domain at Squarespace Domains, register it, and they'll give you, unlike anybody else, a free spam-free parking page. So you get a very clean site ready for you until you're ready to start building. And you got to try the cover page. That's how I got started. And then I said, well, I should do a blog. Now I should do a portfolio. And by that time, I really had a great site. I'm just thrilled. Squarespace Commerce. Every template has commerce built in. They recently introduced advanced analytics for commerce, allowing you to see the traffic of visitors in real time. That's so cool to watch as people come and go. You can see who abandons the checkout carts and where they do, so you can kind of make it work better for your customers. Device filtering and a lot more. Anybody who's built or contributed to three or more active Squarespace websites now has access to something brand new, the Squarespace Circle. Membership gives you advanced guides, optimized support, six-month trial periods for new products and projects, I should say, and a lot more. Squarespace is amazing. Join the million Squarespace customers who are using it today. Start your free trial, squarespace.com. And the one little thing we'd ask, if you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIT, you'll get 10% off. Squarespace.com. Make a beautiful website today with Squarespace. We're talking about the week's tech news. 5G, you said the 5G word, and I'm very intrigued. I think we all are, right? We've heard this. Although we've been through this before. Remember how disappointing WiMAX was? Yeah. 4G, what was that? What did it do? Did it improve things? I don't know. LTE stands for long-term evolution. Is that a technology or a marketing term? So I always worry when I hear 5G. That they're trying to sell us something.
It's it's pretty crazy. I mean, I was at a Mobile World Congress this year, and this is, I think, the first year where we started to see the 5G market kind of start to take shape. Intel was talking about it. Qualcomm was there. Everybody had, like, big plans. And the fascinating thing, too, is I brought up WiMAX to the Intel people, right? Because that's their big mistake.
What a flop.
Just like how they missed
almost
out on mobile
Sprint chips. Almost
put
Sprint out of business, frankly.
Totally. So, and all the Intel people are like, yeah, we're not going to do WiMAX again. We're working with the standards bodies.
But I think it was on the screensaver. We were talking about WiMAX is going to change everything. It's going to bring fast internet to the rural areas. It's really going to make a difference. I don't know what went wrong, if it was a technical issue, a marketing issue.
They didn't work with anybody. I think that was the big thing.
So it was really, wasn't,
have more to add.
It wasn't,
didn't achieve critical mass.
Yeah.
So it wasn't anything wrong with the technology per se. No. See, that's why Intel doesn't really get to say, we're not going to do that again.
Well, I mean, I think what they're saying is we learn from our mistakes, and we're not going to be stupid, and we're going to work with partners and other companies, and we're not going to try to force our proprietary solution when the market is moving one way. We're going to try to move with it.
So there isn't an Intel 5G.
Yeah.
No. No. And they also learned from Qualcomm. Who, do you remember Qualcomm 2.5G? Was only in America. When you left America, your phones didn't work. Do you remember that?
I don't. I mean, I've seen 2.5G. Was that HSPA or what was
it? Yeah, I remember when AT&T had phones that were using 3G, and if you had an AT&T phone, you could walk off to Europe and it would work.
Yeah.
But if you had a Verizon phone, what happened was Verizon was using Qualcomm technology. And the challenge was that Qualcomm took a fairly high percentage in profit margins in terms of licensing fees associated with the technology, and 3G was open, and no one had to pay patent fees. And, of course, if you're making technology equipment, guess which one you went for?
Right.
You didn't go for Qualcomm's equipment.
So what's driving 5G besides the desire not to screw it up again?
Well, it's basically there's several different trends. So 5G isn't one thing. It's not just speed, although there are some 5G standards that are focused on delivering 1 gig performance
ratios.
So
there is a standards body, and there's will have a standard.
Even
the definition of LTE was fuzzy.
Yes. The original idea behind long-term evolution was that it was going to give us a foundation for where the standards could iterate.
Yeah.
And again, though, it turns out that voice doesn't matter. Data does.
Right.
And you can...
Everything's data now.
Everything's data. There's no point
including
in having...
voice.
Yes, that's right. So running voice over IP makes more sense than trying to run voice in a dedicated frequency band.
By the way,
band.
Is it pronounced Volte or Volt?
Who cares?
After the VIV discussion, that was very cogent.
Yeah. I don't know. I think people who have implemented it have sort of regretted the decision, right? Because voice doesn't
over
matter.
LTE.
Yeah, people don't use telephones calls.
They use data.
They use data.
But, you know, when I do get a Volte call, it sounds amazing.
It does sound good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Good.
It's almost creepily high fidelity when you use that.
Yeah, like, are you in my head? How did you do that? Because you're not used to a phone sounding normal.
Right. I don't want to hear you breathe into my ear, and yet that's what you did.
It came. It just came
well, Leo, you can breathe in my ear.
I'm in your house.
They're using telephones for phone calls. I mean, what the hell?
You know. Yeah.
What sort of freaks are you to use phones for calls?
I took the phone capability of my iPhone off my bottom dock, and it felt like a big moment for me. Like, I don't use this
at
all.
That's a good idea.
So I just put it in the middle of the rest of the apps.
Yeah.
So, I don't, what?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You don't have a phone call icon on your dock?
No, check it out.
How do you know what to do?
I just don't do it.
Yeah,
just
don't do it.
I don't use the phone at all. Everything I do is on a conference. IP conference.
So this
service.
Panel is living in the future.
Yep.
Oh, sure. Aren't living in the present.
This is the future? The future stinks, everyone. Disappointments are incoming.
Go back. So, the rest of the world still makes phone calls, I think.
I mean, I call like my parents and my family.
Yeah. Right.
But everyone else is like, you know, Twitter or whatever.
Mm. Yeah. My problem is I live in the UK with an 8-hour time difference to the US.
Right. So you don't call anyone.
So I get interns ringing me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Holy right?
Yeah.
So my level of hostility towards telephones is fairly high.
Yeah, but right? It's not like email is any better. So what do you use? Texting?
I use a WhatsApp? Conference service. I use GoToMeeting.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to talk to me, I'll have a conference call with you, but I won't talk to you in any other way.
So nobody will ever call you because GoToMeeting. Oh, my God.
He seems lovable now, but if you call him at 2 a.m., you get the beast.
Yeah, you're gonna get a fairly solid mouthful of invective. So coming back to 5G. So there is part of 5G which is about standard. There's parts of it which is about getting 1 gig to your handset. Kind of pointless, I suspect, but, you know, whatever. But there are emerging standards.
You know who wants 1 gig to your handset is all the ad tech companies that want 1 gig web pages.
Well, right? What you want with a 1 gig, you want the clock speed to be very high. Here's why. There's a secret here. If I can send data on a frequency at 1 gig, then that frequency is then available for the next message. It's a thing called duty cycle. The faster I can get the message across the frequency and get it off.
It opens up the channel.
Then the frequency is now available. So in some sense, I want the clock speed or the bandwidth, the speed part of the bandwidth to be very high.
Just to keep the channel open.
Just to keep the channel open so I can multiplex more data across
sense.
It. But what we're also seeing is some people are thinking about, can we use 5G for mobile broadband? So instead of using wired access for the
last mile. 5G is not mobile broadband?
There are a group of standards.
I'm confused.
Sort of similar to what there is that company from the Aereo guy. Sort of using a millimeter wave technology, right? For
so 5G is not a replacement for LTE. It's not the next generation.
It's everything. This
is what I'm saying. Yeah. There's part of 5G standards which is just balls to the wall speed.
Yeah.
There's a part of 5G standards which is to be mobile broadband and widely shared amongst, you know, a small thing. There's another part of 5G which includes small cells. So in the current 3G, what they wanted to be able to do is to take these little boxes and put them in your house. So if you had poor 3G reception in your house, you could deploy this small cell technology which would allow you to boost your signal inside of a 50-square-meter, 100-square-meter area. But that didn't work very well for 3G. So in 5G, they're building that into the standards. Mm-hmm. And now they're putting in – and then there's another part of 5G which is to do with low power. You know, we talked about NB-IoT, which is
really low bandwidth, right? Like kilobytes.
Yes.
If that.
And this is where the low power comes from is because it's literally on very low data volume. So low speed, low – but they're using 800 – the old analog TV channels, so the 800 megahertz, 700 megahertz frequency spectrum.
Honestly, like as much as we want the fast speeds and even mobile broadband, that's the most fascinating thing to me.
Yeah.
Like the idea that you have this really, really low power, even if it's slow amount of data tech, that's going to be useful for all sorts of devices going forward.
Yeah. So you've got this thing where you're starting to use different frequencies, you're using different antenna designs, you're starting to see a lot of MIMO. Working out beamforming technologies and standards.
So Susan Crawford, who writes for Back Channel, she's a Harvard law professor, says it's hype. There is no 5G standard yet. ITU has not set a standard for 5G.
Not till like 2018.
So it's like these other standards. It's a marketing term at this point.
No, it's a bit more than that. They are actually arguing over the standards.
Mm-hmm. So there is a conversation going on at the ITU right now.
It's in the ITU. There is 5G. There's tens of millions of dollars being put into it.
She says for the moment, 5G refers to a handful of different kinds of technologies that are predicted but not guaranteed to emerge at some point in the next 3 to 7 years.
Yeah, fair. Except I think
that's what we're talking about. We're talking about all the different pieces. You know,
but it's not going to be. You know, it's not going to be like 3G.
Don't be so morbid. Open the studio. You have to put at least 5 years to get your money back.
Well, if they say 3 to 7, we're talking 10, and then
I think it'll be a lot more fun.
You'd be faster.
Yeah. The what's happened is the big carriers have already stopped spending, in the expectation that 5G. So they're winding back their capital.
It's great. So our broadband today, our data rates today are going to go to crap.
Right, because their capex is down.
Yes.
Great.
Because they have no money.
Wait,
they don't want to invest on anything. because, well, it's all going to change in 3 to 7 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of competing things in here.
Slackers.
Yeah. Slackers.
Well, keep building towers.
A lot of them are prototyping things, too, like to get ready for the 5G wave. So I know Verizon's like testing all sorts of like different antennas and different sort of like
the rhetoric sounds there. So much like WiMAX, for instance. They're calling it wireless fiber, right? Or wireless broadband. That sounds so much like WiMAX.
Exactly.
So that's the high speed. So that's what I said. 5G isn't one thing. Like 3G was fundamentally high speed data rates. That's it. Mm-hmm. HSDPA was the early versions of it, high speed data packet access. In 5G, there's a part of it which is high speed data access, then there's low speed, low power data access, then there's how do we do mobile broadband, high density, low volume, and spread it out over small areas, handling small cells, handling, 800 meg, the television frequency. So as the analog channels, the television channels are reclaimed, we can start allocating those frequencies to carriers.
Is that part of the reclaiming of the low frequency bands? I think the auction is coming
auction
up.
For that,
Yeah.
So at 700, so if you can transmit a signal between 700 and 900 megahertz, or kilohertz, I can't remember, megahertz or kilohertz now.
Well, by a factor of a lot.
Yeah. But basically that signal, television signals go through walls.
Right.
Right.
24 gigahertz goes nowhere. Yeah. It bounces off a feather.
Yeah. So. Yeah. They're like, if you get enough people in a room, enough meat bags, it just dies.
Right.
You can't get through people.
Right.
Yeah.
Enough meat bags.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what wireless people call them, water bags or meat bags.
Bags of water.
Bags of water. That's really flattering.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing wrong with our 5G deployment is all the meat bags.
If we got rid of the meat bags. Yeah. So 5G would work perfectly.
I feel like this whole conversation with this and then the IoT things, it's all about getting rid of the humans so the computers can finally live.
Yep. Yeah, that's what we're building. Yeah. We're building the ideal machine-to-machine interface.
Yeah.
Now who's the malware, Leo?
Yeah.
if you don't get that joke, just wait.
Now who's the malware, baby?
Will be the malware. But
you're talking, we're now talking that the maximum saturated market for people, smartphones, tablets, computers, is around 14 billion devices or two per person.
They're talking, ITU saying, we should have a standard by 2020.
Sounds right. Yeah.
Which is admittedly now, feels like a long time ago, but it's only a long time ahead, but it's only 4 years from now. God, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
And as somebody who said, I have worked with companies and written 10-year plans.
Right.
And you're
so
spending,
it's not unreasonable for them to think this
way. No, and you're talking about, one carrier can allocate $1 billion worth of budget over a 10-year cycle.
Right.
So, and this is why Verizon's getting into content, because 5G will disrupt their business models.
Ah, interesting.
Right? So if you start to look at what Google,
you would think that Verizon would be right ahead of the leader of the pack in this.
Yeah, they've got a really good website on this. Maybe I should. It's heavily tilted in their direction.
Yeah.
Nokia's got some very good information.
But why are they afraid of being disintermediated? Who are the companies that are going to beat them at 5G?
Anybody can start. Because small cells start to extend coverage, and you can start to see municipal start to replace Wi-Fi with 5G.
So will this help municipal broadband efforts then?
Yes, potentially, because
that's
it means
amazing.
No last mile.
That's so huge.
So America's got in terms of regulatory control and infrastructure that's in place, America's heavily burdened with its coaxial cables, right? So the government said, if you run these cables, we'll give you a monopoly over the extracting profits from the cables that's in the ground.
Right.
So Comcast.
And that worked so well.
And that's, yes.
Yes.
Now, if we can bypass those cables in the ground and start to deliver data volumes over...
At a fiber-like rate.
At a DSL-like rate.
DSL-like rate.
Let's start there. Let's be modest. Let's not make it.
I'll take a megabit, baby.
A megabit per second. Then all of a sudden you're starting to, your universal service obligation starts to go out the door. You don't need to run copper into houses because everybody's got mobile. Cable, having coax copper in the ground means I can start to bypass government mandates.
So this is why the dumb pipe guys are anxious to get out of the dumb pipe business. They see no future in it ultimately. At least not the hardwired pipes.
Yes. They should... But you're looking at exactly the same business models that went on with electricity in the 18th
century. Is this why Verizon stopped laying fiber? They gave up on Fios because they knew that ultimately it wouldn't be enough, that this wasn't a long-term...
So they're still laying fiber, but they're laying it in the backhaul or the back...
Right, right.
So
that's where you need it.
That's where you need it.
The backhaul is the connection to from the central office to the cell tower.
To the cell towers.
You need the speed of the cell tower, and then after... There's no last-mile problem.
What does this mean for Google Fiber? Does it have any implications for how Google could roll out its own...
Yes.
Is Google building their own fiber plants, or are they just taking over?
I would talk to the guy over there.
You don't know?
I mean,
they're buying
look at
fiber
me.
from manufacturers. So you don't build, you don't make fiber
you don't
yourself.
Build your, it's a, no, not make it, but I mean lay it. Are they laying their own fiber? Are they
yes,
digging
they
the trenches?
Are digging
they
the
are.
Trenches and right. putting it in. They
seems like that's what you would not, the business you would not like to be in.
You would think that, you know, potentially we could start to use 5G in a, inside of a, it's a 5-year horizon, 5 to 10 year yeah. horizon. But when you're building, burying fiber into the ground, you're looking at a 20-year ROI cycle.
Right.
Right. It doesn't come back.
It doesn't
it's
make
like
sense.
$500 a meter.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
That cable into the ground.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you take into account trenching, safety,
so the answer to your question is, this isn't a good idea for Google to be doing at this point.
Oh no, it's absolutely a great idea for Google because it, it causes the carriers to change their productization.
Right.
You know, Comcast. You know, various of the carriers have monopoly positions, and
they need Google needs to push the future forward. And if they need to do it by using an old technology,
yes.
to scare these guys, they're going to do
and
it.
And they're only investing modest sums yeah. in
well,
Google Fiber.
That's interesting.
We've seen the Google Other Bets returns in their. You know, SEC filings, it's very expensive. In yeah. aggregate, all their other bets, their moonshots, quote, quote. Yeah.
And also, don't forget that big companies are just stupid. So Verizon might well have just, you know, rolled out some fiber and then they decided to spend it on, you know, upgrading the executives' offices in New York or something instead. And then, you know, if nobody was looking, we'll just keep that money. And
Crawford,
you know.
Crawford says because of the bag of water problem, you're going to have to do backhauls not to a cell tower, but almost right to every single home.
And that's exactly what there are versions of 5G standards being promoted to do point-to-point links. And there's also standards where the towers can talk directly. They can actually form backhaul or mesh networks between them. But these are all things. These are all arguing in the standards bodies, right?
What's hysterical is we are about to elect a new president and a Congress that so thinks that Facebook is the state of the art in internet
Trump
connectivity.
Doesn't email.
So I feel like that... The real problem here is that regulators are completely out to lunch on this stuff. They don't understand it very well. Maybe the FCC does.
I think they do understand it, but they operate. And keep in mind that we need to be fairly careful
frame.
To separate U.S.
Yes. No, no.
telecommunications law from
Absolutely.
European telecommunications law as we do from what happens in Asia or right. you know, in the Middle East or right. you know, various Oceania or Australia. Australia has a very similar problem to America. Very large landmass.
Right.
The physical landmass of Australia is the same size as mainland USA.
Right.
So if you want to start
Population
running bandwidth...
Population density is only along the coast.
Yes,
yeah.
But there's also a government monopoly. One of the biggest employers in the country is the National right. Cable Carrier. They don't want to subtract jobs. In the US, it's the bargaining power of the telcos with, you know, in Washington to influence things to go their way. And in Europe, it's a free-for-all. It's very much a community-driven thing. So you're probably going to see the innovation come out of Europe, and it will spread
Crawford
from there in
says,
the same way.
A competitive, terrific 5G future looks great in places like Tokyo, where you can get dark fiber capacity anywhere in the city for $50 a month. It looks good in Stockholm, where Ericsson's teaming up with SK Telecom for 5G applications. In the U.S., we're going to be fundamentally behind in 5G.
That's not new. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like
so once
US
again,
most networking.
The innovation's yeah. going to come from somewhere else, and then once it proves yeah. out, then it'll come most likely, and that's due to the way that telecommunications regulation operates here in the U.S.
Right.
compared to other
right.
markets.
There are some some technical hurdles, but more importantly, there's some, you know, just physical hurdles of getting that
yeah.
high speed data close enough to where it needs to be.
Yeah. So there, you know, when you have if you've got signals being transmitted at 700 megahertz, where like the analog television channels are,
yeah.
they go through walls, they go for miles. You can, you know, make them really powerful or really weak, and they'll go very far. But if you're transmitting, if you're trying to get a gigahertz, you know, like a gigabit per second, you need to be transmitting at 24 gigabits, you know, right up at the top of the spectrum. 24 gigahertz.
That's, you know, the bag of water right yeah. there, boy. You know.
Yeah. So then but that might be suitable for backhaul. So from mobile tower to mobile tower, or cell to cell.
How about that Galaxy Note 7? What do you think?
That's crazy.
That ain't 5G. Have you tried the iReader?
I had brought it here to the hotel with me because I'm going to be writing it up. It's cool. It's a little more comfortable, the new Gear
VR. The 950 and the 950 XL had iris scanner, and it did not... I remember you had to go off. This is back. No, like that. Mm-hmm. Is this better than that?
From what I've seen, it is. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the Gear VR, not the iris.
Oh, the Gear VR. Yeah, that's cool, too.
That's cool
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have the new camera, too. I bought 360.
Yeah, but, you know, it's also like the Note, the whole point of it, right, was a very big screen on a smartphone. And that
everything
was
has a big screen now. Yeah.
So if the S7 Edge.
People like you, bully that you are, Alex Wilhelm, mocked me when I held a giant Galaxy Note, the first Note, to my head.
I still mock people. Yeah. Nobody's holding them up to their
you
head,
looked so. Silly.
But it's not, it was the same size as this phone. So it's we're now used to it, right?
We're a little more used to it. I think the S7 Edge, right, is a 5.5 inch screen. The Note 7 is 5.7.
Yeah, it's so not that much
everything
bigger.
Everything is a phablet
it's
now.
A little bit bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. I like smaller phones still.
You see, that's interesting because when before the iPhone 6 came out, iPhone Apple fans were saying things like Android phones are too big, are they phablets? Ha ha ha. And then the iPhone 6 and 6S came out and they were like, "Oh, this is great."
Yeah.
6 Plus, sorry.
Well, the 6 Plus is the one, yeah.
Because Samsung's Note was selling really, really,
really
well.
Because and then, like more screen space on their mobile device, their main computer, to your earlier point about Chromebooks.
We can thank Samsung, really, for making the big phone.
Maybe?
No?
I think the iPhone 6 Plus, the
that
Plus
brought it
models,
mainstream?
Those are among the worst designed iPhones I've ever used.
Fighting,
I've reviewed
fighting
them.
Wrong with words.
They're top-heavy in a way that isn't great, and because of the way Apple's design works, right? So I have a broken 6S with me right now.
You broke your first phone.
No, not my first one. Oh. But, you know, there's a lot of bezel, right?
Yeah, way too much bezel.
On the top and the bottom of iPhone screens. Yeah. And because you have that on the Plus, there's much more space. Like, it's a much bigger device than it needs to be.
Right.
You can hold an S7 or even a Note. It feels a little
It feels smaller. Yeah,
it feels smaller. So I think Apple hasn't really... They
this,
didn't have a way to master that.
Too.
That feels smaller. That's a great phone.
Yeah. This is the Axon.
I'm not a big fan of the Plus. I know a lot of people like it. I remember just trying to walk down the street and use it during my review. Just couldn't do it. Like, and that's something I have to do a lot. Like, check on email or type in something into maps. You have to
play Pokemon Go.
Whatever. Pokemon Go is important. But even if I'm at home just, like, reading in bed or something, that's a phone that would often just, like, plop right on me.
Yeah.
And it's like,
Are you unusually weak in your forearms? Do you have
No, it's a wrist thing.
Oh.
It would be more wrists. But even then, it's just like not great.
Really?
Not great.
I've actually never dropped my phone sober when I had it in my head.
Well, that is the problem, right?
Yeah. It's,
back,
to make
it
back
I
a little late,
like
you can.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We got to bring it up then. Mm-hmm. Apple is about to really, I think, and just a few weeks away, with a new iPhone, launch into kind of unknown territory. They're going to remove the headphone jack. And it's really, the world is divided among those who say, finally, you're getting rid of that antiquated analog technology. And
the
people
handful
are saying,
of people who are saying that.
Well, somebody's saying it. John Gruber's saying it.
You mean he's defending an Apple
he's
decision?
He's defending an Apple decision.
Zodosh.
Is Apple heading into a buzzsaw with this one?
It seems... this has been something I've been fighting for the past couple of months because being a gadget blog, we've been hearing this for a while.
Right.
I've seen the Moto Z and the new the
also
bigger,
didn't have
also
a
don't
headphone
have it.
Jack.
Yeah. And the Moto Z feels really thin and crazy thin. And I guess
because
I could see why because of that. Yeah. But the other one, the Moto Z Charge, I believe, the slightly more powerful one, that one is the full size of an iPhone. Still doesn't have the headphone jack, and it is just baffling to me because I can't think of a single port that's as universally accepted that works on so many things.
Yep. All have so many headphones.
We all have so many devices that work with it. It's like the one thing that you know when you plug something into it, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a headphone, you're trying to get a microphone in there or something. Yep. That's a little different.
There are other things, even like credit card readers.
Yep.
Card the headphones.
Yeah,
exactly.
But Square is going to make a lightning
version.
But it'll cost more.
Right.
Yeah, and it'll be less reliable than metal connections. I use Bluetooth headphones when I'm running, and they're great. Right, they're fantastic, but they're not as good. Yeah. The fidelity goes down; they're not as reliable. But I'm giving up flexibility.
I think a lot of people are saying Apple's making a decision in favor of wireless headphones. I don't think that's the case.
It's probably straight to Lightning.
I think they want Lightning headphones.
Oh, I really don't want that.
Because
it will only work with an Apple device. It won't even work with an Apple laptop.
Right.
Yep.
That's the irony of it. Apple's still putting, and I imagine will continue to put headphone jacks in their laptop.
And even if they put in a dongle, which is what a lot of people are saying, that's not a good solution.
Right, because the current MacBook doesn't have any other ports beside from USB-C or whatever it is.
Yep.
Okay.
Here's some heresy. Yeah. Given that Apple has not really kept up with the technology, they're not making a phone that is in any respect the equal of most of the other high-end phones coming out from other manufacturers. Mm-hmm. They're going to eliminate a port that everybody wants and expects. Is it possible this iPhone 7 could be a real flop for Apple?
I mean, it's going to be interesting to one to watch. We forget about the was it the 5C or the which one?
5SE is 5C. Selling well.
No, not 5SE. The iPhone C, 6C, which, the one that was C.
The 6C, the color 5C, one. The 5C. Color one. Yeah,
and you know that it was kind a flop. Of, it came and went. Nobody yeah. cared. This is a main model, and it's going to be a bigger difference. Like this is the because of what I do. I've been buying a new iPhone every year. I know right. that's not a
as
normal thing.
No, but as
this
as
year,
do I.
It's like. The 6S is a great phone. It. I'm not going to buy. I don't think I'm going to buy any phone that has no headphones.
Yeah, I
like,
think.
Why? Why would you do that?
Well, you wouldn't. But Lito's point about being a flop, I think we need to keep flop in correct context because it'll sell very well. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it'll help Apple drive iPhone unit growth. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a flop in that it won't actually accelerate.
Will it sell really well?
I think it'll sell as well as the iPhone.
I don't think people will turn away from it.
I'm not going
this,
to.
Will this not? Make Apple users start to look at other brands?
Maybe a handful, but I think...
No, they're like, loyal. They're really loyal.
Either that
You're
or they just
buy one even without a headphone port.
I'm going to... The home screen on my current iPhone is basically the same one I've had since my original iPhone, since 2007. It's like nine
It absolutely is, because and, Apple has not changed springboard appreciably since they added folders.
And you know what? It works. And I like it, and I don't really want more stuff. There's there's nothing on Android that... It can do that my iPhone can't that I'm desperate to have.
Well, that's my and point. So my is point that is a headphone jack may be that
but now I'm
thing. Bluetooth,
but I use wireless headphones now.
Okay.
So that's I feel like I've left the discussion because I feel weird. But last time I was on Twitter, we had the same talk about headphone jacks and so forth, and I was on the team of we should be kept. I think it should still exist, but I don't really have that direct use case now. Yeah. So maybe
Bleak in our chat room says kind of splits the difference as well. Says Apple's doing the right thing, but they're going to pay a price initially.
I don't know why it's everyone says it's the right thing, right? Oh, we got to kill this analog hole because reasons. Because
the floppy example, right? They dropped floppy ports
and
in the
it's
iMac.
Not true.
And,
yeah.
Well, people will say you shouldn't argue against this because they were right about floppy drives.
They were right about CD drives.
Ugh,
and whatever.
Kind of, yeah.
And that's not necessarily true because it's a completely different format and. Just the way they're handling it. Like, there is no benefit to digital direct digital connections. Like, you may get slightly better DACs.
What about if it was a MagSafe connector?
That would not be great for headphones. You want headphones to stick in.
You don't want them to fall off.
You never dropped your phone, hey, caught by the headphones?
So the problem that you have now is if you're not buying an MFI Lightning connector.
That too. Yeah.
And it rips out. You're actually, people are starting to damage their Lightning connectors because they're not, the point of a Lightning connector is it's meant to smash or destroy itself if it goes through a certain... Yeah. Part of it is the mechanicals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nobody ever thinks about connectors as mechanicals. There's a certain pulling pressure at which it's supposed to pop out, and if you apply torsion to it, it should snap off
so that
you don't damage the phone. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what's MFI, right?
You want to take a look at my phone. It's basically
MFI means made for Apple. It's a certification program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also costs companies license fees.
Yeah, it's about 75 cents per connector.
Yeah,
very expensive for it's not FRAND by any fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory licensing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that the trick here is that Apple, I think the real question here is value for money. I think Apple, my perception of Apple, and I'm a long time, like I have an Apple Watch, I have a MacBook, I have an Apple iPhone 6, and I use my classic iPod. So I do not listen to Apple Music. I listen to it on a classic iPod because that's still the best medium for me.
Sure.
If Apple releases an iPhone this year, I will very seriously question whether I'll buy one, not because I don't need a new one. I do because there's a hierarchical plan in my family where they get passed down. But I don't think that Apple products are good value for money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I'm being asked to spend $700 or £700 on an iPhone, I'm looking at that and I'm going like, I'm not getting that. You know, back in 2007 when the first iPhone came out.
That was value for money.
That was value for money.
Yeah.
New cameras in 2012, 2013, there's real value for money in those products.
Well, see, this is my question. This is suddenly a crack in the Apple facade that could end up being very damaging to Apple. If somebody like you is considering not buying an iPhone. For me, the tipping point was the Mac Pro, the trash can Mac, which I frankly feel like I was robbed.
Yep.
I spent $3,000 or $4,000 on that.
Yep.
Although we've seen how you handle hardware, Leo. Like, you took a look at this computer and you were like, poof, purchasing page, let's pick this out.
Yeah, well, I do buy a lot of hardware. That's kind of my job. But I wanted the Pro to be my workhorse, right? Yep. And it's not upgradable. Apple hasn't done anything to it in 2.5 years.
Running slower video cards, yeah.
So the thing about the Mac...
That was supposed to be their best Macintosh.
Well, the trick of the MacBook Pro is perhaps that the CPU that's in it is still the most modern server CPU. It's there has not been major...
No, that Xeon hasn't been much improved since then.
So that motherboard is highly integrated. It's not... And what you really want is, say, maybe a better GPU.
I wish I could upgrade the GPU.
Yep.
Yep.
Or, you know, and so on and so forth. Yeah. But in reality, there's actually been no advances from Intel in that technology in that
time.
No,
and some have said, in fact, this is the article we referred to last week on Extreme Tech, where they said the problem is really that Intel hasn't improved.
Yeah, I subscribe to this article. Yeah. I subscribe to the ideas put out in this article is that things haven't... But my point is... You know, you look at the rumors are that there's a new Apple Watch coming.
Yeah.
Are you going to pay $600 for an Apple Watch or $900 for an Apple Watch?
No.
I bought an Apple Watch off eBay secondhand to here. Like,
yeah, it looks good.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just nice like Apple mine. Watch, right? I spent a lot more for it than I would wager than you did.
I bought it new.
I bought it secondhand, about half the price that you'd pay for a new.
It's probably a pretty brisk market, actually, in used Apple Watches, I would guess.
And it's not worth it. I would not recommend it. You know, at the price that I paid for it, at half price, it was not.
Meanwhile, Apple's spending apparently a lot of money and energy on something like an Apple Car.
Something.
Should they be spending more time on their existing product line and less time on the future? I mean, you've got a plan for the future.
Mm-hmm. Let's dial in Tim Cook.
So here's my take on that, just for what it's worth, and then someone else should have a go. But my belief is that Apple's building an operating system for cars, not a car.
Right. That's the latest thought as well.
But they haven't been very successful with that. General Motors and Ford have basically said, we're going to.
It's directly contrary to the reason Apple exists, which is if you want to make great hardware, you have to make the software that runs on it. To decouple software and hardware.
You're going to be the Windows for cars.
Yeah. And in fact... even somebody like Elon Musk has said, you really need to make the hardware and software together because the lessons you learn from the hardware inform the software. To decouple them is probably not the best procedure.
Because Apple has to have a battery plant.
Right.
And they so Tesla has taken over.
He's
building.
He's got the Gigafactory.
And China's got Gigafactories too, right? They've got battery manufacturing. Are you telling me that Apple's going to OEM a car?
Right. No. I think the whole idea was crazy. But again, I would say they should be focused on the... I think maybe it's time to put a little more energy into the product. Let's take a look at this Ultrabook you've got here. This is Lenovo, and it's an OLED screen. This is their ThinkPad X1 Yoga.
Yes.
So X1 it's Yoga. Kind of, it does yoga, right? It does downward dog.
It does
warrior pose.
All the fun stuff.
There's your downward dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all the way over.
That OLED screen, though.
That screen
it's
is
really nice.
You like it?
Yeah.
If you can't tell on the video recording, it's just gorgeous.
It's just like...
I love my OLED TV.
OLED is the future of, like, display. Like, that's what I want everything to look
like. Yeah, in fact, Apple's even kind of fallen behind with its IPS displays on the iPhone.
That's the other thing.
Well, the rumor is next year they'll be doing an OLED.
Next year, the problem is
Samsung kind of makes all the screens, right?
Samsung and LG.
Between the two of them, I hope Apple can...
What are they going to do?
Get a few screens.
Wrapping up, like, the whole iPhone discussion, like, next year's model will probably be the one that...
That's
gives
the one
the value that you're looking for maybe giving up a headphone jack.
Typically, that's what they've done in the past, the TikTok, and this is going to be a TikTok.
Sure.
Kind of.
Yeah. So it may be a disappointment, but it'll sell well.
No, I'm good. It was a great little phrase selected.
It's a TikTok.
It kind of reminds me when the 4S happened, right? That was the first, let's do that design again with slightly better hardware, and now we're doing it for a second.
They haven't done that 3 years in a row yet.
No.
I don't think we can keep expecting hardware to double every 2 years.
Exactly.
No, because we've reached peak phone. We kind of know what a phone should be.
Yeah.
That's what, $300 at Axon?
$400 for this Axon.
For a premium, like,
in every respect.
Looking phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dual front-facing speakers with Dolby Atmos sound, although what that means on a phone
is... It's just software.
I think you know we've finished a product category when we've ground all the profit margin out of it across the world.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Computers, televisions, phones have been...
To be fair to Apple, would not exist if Apple hadn't invented all these products and created a manufacturing process in China that could crank them out at huge volumes.
We wouldn't have Gorilla Glass without the iPhone.
They're benefiting from the fact that these sensors, the radios, everything is cranked out in mass volume at a very, very low cost now.
Yep.
The problem is Apple isn't dropping its price to match the lower cost.
Hence the 5SE, which is designed to have a lower ASP.
$100 lower.
Which matters.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but it's not enough, is what I'm saying.
No, I agree with that entirely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a good attempt. It just flopped.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to see Apple's average selling price for products has to drop, whether it'll drop this year or not. And this comes back to the headphones thing.
Yep.
I think you know, with the value for money dropping away. And then if they suddenly switch headphones, then the backlash could be enough to have an impact on the bottom line. Mm. Apple's a hugely profitable company, and they may not even notice. But, you know, I mean, they're already using TRRS instead of TRS on the audio jacks, you know, the four-way jacks. They don't have standard. It's a more modern standard for it to allow the auto, you know, when you have the little buttons and you press for speak.
For the microphone.
For the microphone stuff, yeah. Right. And it's a tip ring rings TRRS
sleeve.
Jack. Yeah, sleeve. So if you move to Bluetooth, you know, I don't own a pair of Bluetooth headsets. Mm-hmm. I have no idea why I would buy any because I've already got enough stuff to charge.
Oh, you know. I bought them because they were like $18 and I broke my iPhone's little port thing we're talking about. So, aww. You know, worked out. Mm-hmm. It's better getting a new phone. So,
I mentioned this before, but Steve Gibson has a theory that Apple will do noise-canceling headphones because mm-hmm. with the Lightning jack, you have power and you have computing capability. So you could actually, in mm-hmm. theory, make definitely. These headphones something compelling. If they do that, that's different. You have yep. to give me value for taking away the headphone jack.
Maybe.
They'd have to put those in the box, though.
What yeah. about
they're not going to do it, by the way. So I know they're not going to do
Apple,
it,
what
but
about
it's a good
things,
theory.
Gross margin.
What about yeah. DRM? If you the Lightning connector.
That's the other story. Cory Doctorow wrote on Boing Boing mm-hmm. This week, and of course, Cory is a very strong advocate against DRM, that's all this really is.
Mm-hmm. I'm really concerned just about, I've got all sorts of audio accessories.
It's to close the analog hole.
Yeah, that the Lightning port doesn't work.
Right.
The TRS jack, the 3.5mm yep. audio jack works yep. sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm, yeah.
Are we still looking for stories?
Always. But let's take a break, sure. and then we'll get some more stories. Please, guys, find the stuff you want. We could talk about iMessage and Matthew Green, the cryptographer from Johns Hopkins, saying, you know, it isn't really end-to-end encryption. It's not much stronger than SSL. In fact, if you don't, if messages aren't delivered, anybody can see them. You can go to Apple and say, what did he say? It's not really end-to-end encryption. We could talk about that. There's lots to talk about. But before that we do that, we should talk about your favorite way to make a phone call, Greg Farrow. You didn't know this, but GoToMeeting is a sponsor.
Did I segue again?
You did it again. You did it again. You're a natural. You should have a podcast. GoToMeeting is the online meeting tool that makes you – it's so easy and so quick to make more than a phone call. You can start with a conference call. In fact, GoToMeeting, you just click a link, sends an email out, and you can have a conference call. Just do that. But then, if you want, turn on cameras. Now you're seeing your client face-to-face. Turn on screen sharing. Now you're seeing their document or they're seeing yours. You show them your PowerPoint. You collaborate together on documents. GoToMeeting is so fast and easy to use. I've used it to prepare a speech with somebody that we were going to give jointly. We were in different places in the country, and we went over it together, even the timing and everything, with GoToMeeting. You can send private chats and video links to your meeting. You can pass off presenter duties with ease. And it's free for 30 days. There's no reason not to become a meeting MVP, no matter where you are, with GoToMeeting. Go right now to GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. And from now on, instead of starting a phone call, start a GoToMeeting, and you'll have all those capabilities available to you. GoToMeeting.com.
I can really highly recommend it. I've used all of the different conferencing platforms.
This is the easiest. It's easy for your clients because they get a link, they click it.
Yep.
Even if they've never installed it, it installs really kind of like 30 seconds and they're there and it's running.
And it's really easy to use USB headsets and get high quality audio.
Get really good audio.
You were talking about Vault for high quality audio.
Sure.
The simple point of fact is that your iPhone is not designed for good voice quality.
Shocked.
It's designed for data. And so if you have a headset, then your GoToMeeting becomes way better.
Because it's data.
Because it's data.
Yeah.
So I can highly recommend.
When they first created the telephone, as I remember, the calculation was, because of course in the early days it was wire, point to point. You wanted to use as little bandwidth as possible. What is the lowest bit rate you can use and still be intelligible? And it was something like 6 bits per second.
5.4 kilobits.
5.4.
Yep.
And it still is.
Yes.
Yeah.
the whole thing has changed, but it's like movies are still 24 frames a second. It was to save film stock, but we just, I guess we got used to it. We expect it. And now when you get a real phone call or real voice, it's like, whoa. That's why we were so thrilled when Skype became widely available. That's what made this network possible.
Yeah.
Because we could do a podcast with people all over
the world. You always know a mobile phone call because usually the companion is running at about 5.4 kilobits per second. That's why it sounds so muddy. They've taken, 4,000 hertz and compressed it into...
And they don't really need to.
Mm.
Not anymore.
No. They can easily run a 32-bit, 32 kilobit.
You can have an 8-bit codec. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's why we use GoToMeeting for everything.
Yeah, I don't blame you. We had a wonderful week, as you may have known if you saw the shows this week on Twit. But if you didn't, watch this fine, tiny little movie all about it.
Previously on Twit.
John liked to label things. He even had a label on his blank.
John's label maker. He's label maker.
Know-how.
In a world where know-how talks about how to build a DEFCON badge.
And we thought it would be interesting to assemble one of these DC DEFCON Darknet badges that you talked about.
Wait. I told you, man, you could do it.
It just took a few years.
Triangulation.
Our guest, and I'm really glad to have him, Paul Adams. You worked at Google Plus early on, right?
I did, yeah. I was there for its inception.
Loved Google Plus. What went wrong?
If you have a dingy nightclub and it's like happening in there and people are having the time of their lives and it's full and someone opens a new nightclub next door, the edges are better, but it's basically the same. You're just not moving everyone in next door.
This Week in Law.
The Moral Machine is a platform for gathering human perspective on moral decisions made by machine intelligence. It shows you moral dilemmas where a driverless car must choose the lesser of two evils, such as killing two passengers or five pedestrians.
If you tell an autonomous vehicle that anyone crossing against the light and is fair game, New York City is in real trouble if they start rolling out autonomous vehicles.
Twit, making the world safe for technology.
And if you thought that was good, well, Jason Howell has a look at the week ahead.
Thanks, Leo. Here are a few stories we're going to keep a close eye on in the week ahead. First, apparently, Minecraft is coming to the Oculus Rift sometime this upcoming week, so we'll look forward to that. Also, if you happen to pre-order BlackBerry's DTF50 Android device, they start shipping on Monday, August 15th, though I'm guessing you probably didn't do that. The Intel Developer Forum happens Tuesday, August 16th through 18th in San Francisco, and you can usually expect some announcements to come out of that event. On Wednesday, August 17th, you too can drop $5,000 on GoPro's six-camera Omni virtual reality recording rig. No big deal. On Friday, August 19th, Samsung's eagerly awaited Galaxy Note 7 is officially available on all major U.S. carriers, though it'll cost you a smooth $850 if you buy it unlocked. Also on the 19th, Samsung is releasing its Gear 360 VR camera for $350 in the U.S. That's only $4,650 less than the GoPro rig. Just saying. That's a little look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Jason Howell. We'll be catching all of that every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. Actually, on TNT, but actually, I think we're not doing a Friday. Are we not doing Friday's TNT? Pardon me? 10 It'll be at 10 a.m. on Friday to give them time to tear down the studio for the final time. So tune in a little early on Friday for TNT. All right. You all get to pick a story that we didn't cover, that you wanted to cover, that we were mad that Leo didn't even think of it. Now they're all working furiously, but I'll start with you because I know you have one, Devin.
I got one ready to go. This week, Snapchat had another face mask issue, another racist issue with the mask.
That so the last one was it was to celebrate Bob Marley
one,
and it put blackface on you.
Yep, with redlocks and stuff.
Is that bad?
Yes.
Pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
Even if it was supported by the Marley estate and everything, that's pretty bad. You don't do that. Yeah.
I mean, I agree. Blackface is bad. And it was a big thing in college campuses over the last couple of Halloweens to do blackface.
I remember in college, I had to explain this to some kids.
This is terrible.
Don't do that. That's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do that. And
so this filter was bad. So now they're not doing blackface anymore.
Sure. Now they're doing
yellowface.
Yellowface. Which is not
great. Oh, that is bad.
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't seen it.
Oh, yeah. It's bad.
It gives you slanty eyes and buck teeth.
It's not great. It is not great at all.
That is the racist imagery that was used during World War II.
And they're saying that, they were trying to go for anime imagery. Anime doesn't have buck teeth, dude.
No, they have big
eyes.
That's
not how it works. So this is...
That's blatantly racist.
So everybody complained. They reacted. I'm more like, why the hell? You've already done this.
Don't you know?
Be smarter. Be better. Come on.
But you had a good reason for this.
I had a good reason.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
programmers.
It's mostly programmers. It's probably,
it's a bunch of white young guys, privileged guys.
Yep.
Hey. And they don't have you, Alex. And they don't have that sensitivity. Me, too, to be honest.
Well, the young part,
Yeah. I'm an old white privileged
there
guy.
There we go.
But this, this is what happens like when, yeah, you don't have enough diversity in your culture. Somebody just walk by and say, hey, don't do that. That's bad.
Right, because right, everyone at this table was like instantly like, oh, no, terrible idea. This made it through ideation, development, testing.
PR,
and launch. And then they're like, oh, crap.
Mm-hmm. I would argue this is worse than the blackface one.
This
is probably worse. Really bad.
I mean, they left the Bob Marley one up for a while. They took this one down immediately. But this one is... They're both pretty bad.
They're both bad.
They're not good.
Yeah.
And it's more like for a company that is so young and growing so quickly and valued so much, it's astounding to me that they can be this tone deaf because representation matters.
Uber did the same thing. They seem to have learned not to do that stuff. They probably just buried the sentiments and make sure they don't come out. But
yeah.
There's something to be this kind of thing going on. And that's the best argument I've heard yet for diversifying the workforce in Silicon Valley. It's not just because it's the right thing and the fair thing to do.
Yep.
You actually are making worse products because you are a monoculture.
And it doesn't reflect the people who are actually using your products too. So,
Yeah.
It's like when people argue that car ownership is dead because of Uber.
Mm-hmm.
Like today, we almost didn't get to come to this show because our Uber drivers wouldn't drive us to Petaluma.
We got in first Uber. I was like, okay, thanks for taking us to Petaluma. And they were like, nope.
Get out. So we tried
but
it again.
When you call an Uber, you tell them where you're going.
Yep. Yeah, the driver doesn't know until he gets to where you're
going. Oh, he doesn't.
Ah, that's interesting.
I got into two different cars, buckled up, and got told to get out. And then we took a regular taxi all the way here. Thanks very well.
It was crazy expensive, but he got us here. So yeah.
That's all right. We'll pay the freight.
Yeah, that's fine. It's all expense. It's all expense.
We're glad.
The point is that people
like $100.
Wait, we're losing the thread.
I just like to point out I had no problems getting here in an Uber.
Then you like you.
Maybe it's the people.
Then you got a good Uber driver.
That's actually probably not wrong.
Yes.
You look like the type that's going to throw up in my car.
Yeah. This iced tea's killing me. But to your point about monoculture and its negative impacts, people say you can get around now without a car because of Uber. But what if you have a disability or you have a dog or you have a child or you're not
wealthy? Or you're normal and you don't use Uber. You don't have a smartphone. There's all sorts of reasons.
Right. And so I think to your point, it's very accurate that if we have a more diverse workforce in Silicon Valley, it'll lead to not just different products, but actually better products for all of us. And in this case, I think you can do the smell test by how there's universal condemnation of Snapchat and almost no that I saw response in that it wasn't actually bad. And that proves they were so far over the line that no one even got up to stand up.
Nobody defended it.
No one was like, Snapchat
even
was
Even Milo Yiannopoulos did not defend.
Don't do that. Don't bring him up.
No, don't even mention the name. It's like Beetlejuice once.
Mm.
You only have to say it once.
I'd rather hang out with Voldemort.
That is actually appalling.
Anywho,
shocked.
I have a different story.
Did they apologize?
Their excuse was that they were going for anime style. I don't know if they actually apologized.
That is not a no excuse. You just say, oh God, that's horrible. You're right. Sorry, we're taking it right down.
Mm-hmm.
There's you can't say we were going for anime.
Even if they were.
Okay, your story, Alex Wilhelm.
So my story is a headline from the Register that I'm super excited about. It relates to the kerfuffle between Adblock Plus and Facebook.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my best to read this verbatim.
We didn't even talk about this. Yes, let's talk about it.
Well,
So Adblock Plus said we're going to block Facebook ads. Facebook immediately applied a technology to block Adblock Plus and pointed out that Adblock Plus, in their fix of that, ended up deleting people's posts as well as ads.
Right.
Well, I don't know where it stands now. Is Adblock Plus on top or Facebook?
Well, listen to the headline and tell me if you can understand where we currently are. All right. So Adblock Plus blocks Facebook block of Adblock Plus block of Facebook block of Adblock Plus block of Facebook ads.
Wow.
This arms race will never end.
I wish I could have written that.
So
that
is, more slowly.
That's a great headline.
Adblock Plus blocks Facebook block of Adblock Plus block of Facebook block of Adblock Plus block of Facebook ads.
Wow.
In other words, I don't actually know what that means, so I can't answer your question, but so I
we
thought I'd read the headline instead.
Right now. Yeah.
It was really hard writing about this story just because Adblock's name is Adblock, and then it's about ad blockers, and then it's about Facebook blocking them. So, yeah, I can understand that.
And Engadget is ad-supported, and a lot of pages are ad-supported. We're ad-supported.
The web is.
And I have to say, ironically, Facebook is not the worst by any means offender.
Mm-hmm.
Their ads are benign compared to most pages.
Usually pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the right there.
They haven't bribed Adblock Plus to get on the whitelist.
That too.
They're
not acceptable.
They said specifically they're not going to pay.
Specifically, Adblock Plus makes its money by taking fees and proof that they are a suitable advertiser or a trusted advertiser so that Adblock Plus lets their ads through. So if you install Adblock Plus, you still see Google ads
and various ad networks because so they guarantee that they're putting clear ads.
You can turn off the acceptable ads policy on AdBlock Plus as a user so you don't have to see those ads. Secondly, those ads still have to adhere to the standards, that the acceptable ad standards, which are set by a larger group than just AdBlock Plus and are used by other ad blockers.
Why doesn't Facebook just buy AdBlock Plus, turn AdBlock Plus off of Facebook ads, and then block all other ads on the internet?
Man, you figured it out.
Think about it. Brilliant. They should do that. That's be very expensive. Facebook has a lot of money.
Just block all the other ads.
In fact, Yahoo could have bought them, done that, and then survived.
Yeah. Yep. At that point, the FTC is probably like, let's not do that.
Buy it quickly and don't tell anyone.
Yeah. At that point, you're actually interfering with people's personal preferences, and you're getting very close to American constitutional crisis.
That's all right. We're already there. Yeah. Let's just go all the way.
Have you seen America today?
So AdBlock Plus looks for HTML tags and JavaScript tags inside of the code. And as fast as AdBlock Plus works out the pattern matching that they need to do, Facebook then iterates their web page and does an instant deployment.
I'm curious because the simplest way to defeat this is by being a first-party ad. The reason that these ad blockers work is because they're third-party ads coming from a source other than Facebook.com. Is that not true?
Not always. So Facebook has a lot of its own ads now that it generates.
Would those not be blocked?
So you actually have to look for the tags in the HTML code.
So they are looking at now deeper than just the source. They're looking at the actual content. They're doing deep packet inspection in effect of the ads.
DoubleClick.net is where a lot of Google's ad DFP program comes from. There's like 1,000.
So first party ads could be blocked as well now.
Well, that you want to be able to do that, but you have to be able to recognize.
Well, I don't want to be able to do that.
There has to be a consistent tag match in the HTML for it to work.
Yeah.
And so Facebook just keeps iterating its code.
We had a guy on yesterday on the new Screensavers proposing a new form of ad blocking. The site is ourdata.us. A friend of mine, David Glickman, who is a serial entrepreneur, he said, well, what if we did it this way? We have an ad blocker, runs under iOS with the official ad blocker check mark and all that stuff. And instead of blocking ads, we go to content companies and we get them – let me see if I can get this right. We get them to pay us, and then we pass along the money to you. In other words, you get paid for your attention. Mm. Otherwise, you don't see the ad. Because the real problem here is, and I'm sure this is a problem for you, it's a problem for PC Perspective, it's a problem for Engadget, I doubt it's a problem for Mattermark because they're made of money, but the problem is that so much of what we consume, the content we consume, is ad-supported, and I don't want to kill that. I think that's a great thing. You don't want paywalls all over the internet. That's not a solution.
If you like the internet, ads suck, but you probably want these things to exist.
And the other side of this is you're pushing ads underground, and you're starting to promote native content, ads that look
which
like content,
even, yeah,
which is far worse. So I
have a question. Do you run ad blockers yourself?
Yeah, I'm running UBlock Origin.
Yeah, I ran AdBlock when I was at TechCrunch. I mean, honestly, the ad guys didn't like that. But
The reason I run it here is because I'm showing websites, and so we don't want to have a lot of cluttered websites.
Yeah.
But I have to, and I don't run it on mobile, by the way, which is really where you need an ad blocker.
It's getting really, really bad. Yeah. Browsing on your phone is now almost unusable because you get pulled into application links and so forth. It's terrible.
I would submit, though,
Androids, you're suddenly get app downloads happening automatically.
Ew.
Wow.
Yeah. That is super, super gross.
Because
this new Android thing where they do the instant install of the app and then they chunk the app in the download. And people are bypassing that to do automatic.
That's not available yet until Nougat or Nougat, as your people would have it.
Yeah.
What?
No, Australians say Nougat. Yeah.
Ugh. Oh, wow. It's a bad enough word in our pronunciation.
Nougat.
I mean, I love everything else. Just that pronunciation, do not like.
But so that's not widely spread, but it will be when Nougat becomes the standard. And that's terrifying.
Yes. Think about that. Think about what happens to. In a country like the US,
where your
data plans
get downloaded and run,
there may be a
there's got to be a way to
people are working
fix
out
this.
Maybe but that would be a real fear. Think about how much, but for me, it's just a speed thing. I go to websites, and the popovers, the pop unders, the blockers, I don't have time to wait for them to load.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, it's seconds, like 15, 20 seconds for a page for a major media property to load.
I'm always curious if there's more data used for the ads that get on mobile or more data used to actually load
the
content.
That's absolutely proven.
Probably for the ads.
Yeah. And that's very annoying to me. Yeah.
So 2 seconds for the page to load and 15 seconds for the ads.
Killer.
Yeah. A lot of that's to do because that's a live transactional market. So your data is actually extracted and then it goes into a live market. The impression is actually bought and sold, traded on multiple auction sites before the ad's actually delivered to you.
Technology.
Yeah.
Incidentally, speaking of Snapchat, what do you think of Instagram's stories?
It's definitely a blatant copy. They've admitted.
Oh, they don't care. Yeah. Why shouldn't it be? That's fine.
I mean, it's...
My problem is it's not navigable very well. So I thought it was a great idea. Yeah. But now I have probably 20 stories up at the top there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through all those stories, so I just ignore it. Their initial response apparently is quite good. However, I have a feeling it's going to tail off.
They're lifting a more like casual usage that Snapchat kind of made popular. So
I just think it's poorly implemented on Instagram.
I wonder if they're trying to do more to blunt or limit or mitigate Snapchat's growth curve than actually drive stories usage on Instagram itself.
Yeah.
Why not replicate and borrow?
Right? Interesting. And maybe for brands.
#brands.
I mean. Mm-hmm. #brands.
#brands.
#brands, baby.
Got all those brands.
It's all about the brands, isn't it? I mean, wasn't it for Snapchat? The stories started really as a way for brands like Yahoo with Katie Couric to provide content on a Snapchat platform.
Whenever people say Yahoo now as an example, I'm always like, oh, we know how that ends.
Yahoo.
Like, it's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah. That didn't work so good. Yeah. Oh. Guys call Yahoo. All right, let's see here. Alan Malventano, you're next. Did you pick a story? Have you been thinking?
I turned it into a shameless plug to wrap the show up.
I like it.
All right, so it's the last one in the notes.
Okay, hang on, because we don't want to wrap the show up yet. It's Greg Farrow has the chance to say a story as well.
So
the one I like is that researchers cracked Microsoft Secure Boot feature.
What's the Secure Boot feature?
Secure Boot. Oh. Sorry, I'll get a bit later.
Who says Boot? Did you love the mod scene presentation of that? I got to show you.
Yeah.
So this is the golden key crack, and what a big problem this is going to be for Microsoft.
So the idea was that computers that Windows sold would only be able to run Windows, and the BIOS would be locked with a secure key that Microsoft
now,
had.
Now, that is a little bit of a biased way to put it.
Yeah.
I think more... Microsoft's intent was not to keep you from running Linux, but just to make sure that you didn't have a rootkit, you didn't have a modified operating system, that you were, in fact, running a good version of Windows. I think you could say it was anti-competitive, and I think some Linux users did. But
Microsoft had choices about how they chose to implement this feature, and they chose to use the anti-competitive feature.
Oh, all right. Well, guess what? No good deed goes unpunished, and no bad deed goes... This is the mod scene reveal of the bug. And so this...
That's awesome.
Isn't this hysterical? If you had an Amiga... You can turn up the music on this, too. If you had an Amiga, you would recognize the style of music, the style of animation, and even the Amiga typeface.
That is so awesome.
Now you can turn the music down.
Oh. It's an old school like intro to when you would get games on the underground.
Yeah,
like
in the Amiga world, there were a lot of these circulating. They called it the mod scene.
Yeah,
people were circulating this. However, if you scroll down, you'll find an interesting hex block that is apparently.
I wonder what that is.
The secure key.
Oh,
so what does this mean, Greg Farrow?
So, first of all, this means that people who've bought Windows-only computers can now unlock the secure boot and put on whatever they like.
Is that hard to do? Because I'm curious. I mean, it sounded like it was a fairly long process.
It is a bit. I believe I'm not an expert here because I actually don't care much about Windows. I just don't use it.
No, I care about putting Linux on Windows machines, though. I like to do that.
So I suspect somebody will package it up into a useful utility. But the flip side of this, of course, is that malware authors or people who of malicious intent now have the opportunity to take advantage of this and start accessing into your BIOS, right?
That's bad. And that was the at least Microsoft's stated intent for this is to keep people from mucking around with your boot code.
So fair enough. But what it also, I think, the more deeper ramification is this shows that cryptography algorithms where a magic key, like the golden key, you mandate it, always fails.
Yeah.
And it's not because the actual implement, in this case, you would have expected Microsoft to stuff up the implementation with really crappy programming because that's what they've done for the last 20 years. So provably you'd expect them to repeat a bad pattern. But what they actually did was posted the code onto GitHub or something, like there was a public code repository.
He didn't even have to extract it? He just found it on GitHub?
Found it and put that bit. I believe that's the story. I hope I got that right.
Slipstream.
So it's not even like somebody did clever hacking to bypass. Apparently the code's pretty sound.
Oh, Lord.
It was just... But once the key's gotten...
But that's the problem with these keys is that they have to live somewhere in the clear to be usable. Yep. So even if it wasn't published on GitHub, there would be some way to extract that.
So if somebody could just...
That's what happened with
make
DVD.
Make sure that Theresa May in the UK knows about this and... The Republican nutjobs.
Slipstream in his beautiful mod scene code here actually has a paragraph about the FBI. Are you reading this? If you are, then this is a perfect real-world example of why your idea of backdooring crypto systems with a, quote, secure golden key is very bad. Smarter people than me have been telling this to you for so long. It seems you have your fingers in your ears. You seriously don't understand still. Microsoft implemented a secure golden key system, and the golden keys got released from Microsoft's own stupidity. Now, what happens if you tell everyone to make a secure golden key
system? I love how mean that is. Yeah. Like, not only did I crack your thing, steal your stuff, and publish it, I'm also going to get other snide remarks at different alphabets of agencies. But and this is it's not wrong, or she.
Yeah.
I mean, that key packaged up with the right exploit means that your system with secure boot gets a rootkit on it.
The other side of this is almost all systems sold today, you can disable secure boot in the startup, in the what we used to call BIOS setup. I don't know what you call it.
UEFI.
Days. UEFI setup. It's not even that. It's the setup code.
Sure.
I don't even know. I don't even know what you... What do we call... I'm going to call it BIOS setup because everybody knows what that means.
Yeah.
And you can disable it. It was only a handful of devices like the Surface RT... Yeah. That you couldn't bypass this.
Yes.
So good news, now you can put Linux on your Surface RT.
Because those sold so well 4 years ago.
And if you're a hacker, hey, good news. You can now hack four people who
you
have.
You can turn them into a photo frame.
I think I have four of them, so there you go. Just come to my house.
I have an RT machine. It's cracked with a cracked screen.
For me, it's taking that to the British government, who's trying to implement what they call the Snooper's Charter and you know, mandate that all encryption shall be crackable. And
far as I know, Theresa May does not listen to Twit.
But Theresa, if you're on, hi. We're big fans. Please don't ruin encryption.
Please. Oh, is the Snooper's Charter back?
Yeah.
They're proposing anything? Because I remember Cameron said, no, we're not going to do this. But then he backpedaled a little bit. And now, of course, Theresa May, I'm sure she
was. Well, she was the champion of that as the Home Secretary.
Right.
And she's now...
she's Prime Minister.
It's now past the lower house and it's in the Lords.
Oh, well, the Lords would never approve that.
Oh, because the Lords are so up-to-date on technology.
Well, with
their instruments for their progressive...
What is this all about?
Where's my ear trumpet?
Well, with the Labour Party in such a... With the opposition political party in such disarray in the UK, it might actually get through.
Oh, boy.
With Brexit and all the...
No kidding.
Yes. It's a real concern.
So what would be the impact of the Snooper's Charter getting through?
Basically, that any encrypted communication... It would be illegal to create an uncrackable... use uncrackable encryption.
As it is now in Putin's Russia, by the way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Every... and I don't know what the upshot of this is. I don't even know how they enforce this. But Putin signed an executive order saying that any encryption used in Russia had to have... the company that created it or sold it or distributed it had to have a way of reading the clear text and passing it along the Russian government if asked.
So we'll see. The question is, there's a lot of laws that governments make that never actually get enforced.
I doubt very much that they've banned iPhones in
The flip side of
Soviet,
this is that if I do something
Soviet.
And the government decides that I'm...
They can
I
go
need
after
be,
you.
I'm instantly a criminal for using safe cryptography.
And
at that point, they can take my computer because I've been breaching the law.
Well, good news, iMessage is no longer safe, so you're okay.
Wait, so because of Boris Johnson and the Leave Brigade, David Cameron's gone, so we have someone who's even more hawkish and gets technology even less, so really we can blame this all back to
Brexit.
Boris. Good.
Yep.
Yes. His hair is very annoying to me, so I'm glad you can blame something more on him.
Yeah. Good old Boris.
Well, battle Boris, but I'll take it.
I think we could now go to Alan Malventano, who will wrap this up and put a nice bow on it.
It's not even a news story. It's kind of news.
What's the story?
So me being a storage editor and reviewing SSDs and stuff all the time, it's probably the bottom link.
Okay.
I made my own test.
A test for what?
To test SSDs and hard drives and stuff. So I've been using this for a few months, kind of rolled it out. And,
it's a latency percentile test.
Yeah, it's called latency percentile. So
what the hell is that?
What you do is so SSDs do a lot of things, and most tests will give you the average performance throughout a given test.
Right.
They'll run a test for a few minutes,
right,
and you get a specific number, right? What I noticed is there's a lot of SSDs out there that, due to that
poor firmware implementation we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. where they kind of get hung up on themselves, shuffling stuff around. They might hang for like a second or two every so often. But the problem is, if you run a test over the course of a couple of minutes and you have one or two of these little hangs
in
there.
It gets averaged out.
It's averaged out. You don't notice.
Would I notice the hang as a user?
Absolutely.
So it's just a pause as I'm using the computer?
Yeah, you're trying to do something. You're trying to open up an app, something, and it just kind of sits there for a second or two because it's busy waiting for some of the IOs to complete, right? So the key is that a few of these requests will just take a little bit longer than all the rest of them, right? The only way to track that and find that is you have to look at every IO. Every single one. Wow. You have to log all of them. So I test SSDs that do like upwards of, like the fastest ones do almost a million IOs per second. So
a second?
A second.
And I run this. You can't log that?
I do.
How would you log that?
That's my secret sauce. I figured out how to do it.
In RAM.
Basically, yeah. But what I do is, where's that?
So is that what that spike is, for instance? Is that a pause right
So
there?
What you're looking at there is the source data for where I generate the percentile results.
Okay.
And those are a bunch of different items. And if you scroll down a little bit.
All right.
So I've kind of turned that into what's called a percentile. And it's showing, okay, where is the point where all of the IOs fall on an SSD? How long do all of them take? And the things on the left there are NVMe SSDs, and then
look at that.
Wow. A little bit closer to them, a little bit to the right is SATA SSDs, mm-hmm. and then there's a really old SATA SSD that's that spike down the center, that gray one.
Yeah,
right. And then the three things on the right.
These are spinning drives.
Three different RPM hard drives.
Yeah,
right. And so since that's
isn't that
log
funny?
Scale,
so we were buying these 10,000 RPM hard drives to get this micro improvement. If we just bought SSDs, even crappy SSDs.
And that's a log scale. So every time you go a major increment. Yeah, you're times 10 every time you go a major increment over.
Wow. So they were. So those 10,000 RPM drives were 100 times faster. However, we're talking
you're
thousands.
Going, way and way faster. And then when the crosswind stuff comes out, it's going to be even closer to the left edge of that axis, right? So where it comes into play is testing SSDs and finding the ones that do that kind of hang for periods of time.
Not all of them do that.
That's just the example I showed to explain the technology. But if you go to the next page, if you go to the next page in the article, go to like the top.
I got to go down. Or go to the end.
Yeah. And you go to the second to the bottom picture. Where are you going?
Well, there's a lot of comments here.
I mean,
shouldn't have gone to the end. Oh, should I go to the top?
Yeah, go to the top.
I don't understand how these slideshows work. Conclusion?
Next page. No,
latency weighted percentiles. Yeah. Here we go.
And so that's where I'm comparing the drives.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you scroll down to like second to the last picture, those are reads. Reads tend to be pretty much equivalent across different models. But if you scroll down a little, you start getting into the
difference. Oh, look at this.
Okay. So now you see that there's an SSD there that's doing something that the
What's
other ones are not doing.
What's that blue one doing? That little stair step thing.
That has a significant number of IOs that are taking a very long time.
Interesting.
And they're actually getting far enough over in that chart to where the hard drives were operating before.
Yeah. So don't buy the Plex Store.
The Plex Store M6E was the one that didn't do very well. And if you scroll down a little more.
This is great that you wrote this because I don't think this would be obvious at all.
No, those are.
In any other test.
Those kinds of hiccups are things that totally get lost in the wash if you just did average performance from those things. Yeah, and that's as you put more load on the drives, even some of the better ones start to become a little bit worse.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, looks like a New York subway map once you start getting a little crazy.
Well, this is really interesting. So, what do you like?
What do I like?
The OCZ? No.
950 Pro still good.
950 Pro.
Even
the Samsung.
Even the Samsung 850 Evo drives, anything over 500 gig, those drives are amazing. They saturate SATA. Like if you don't have a need for NVMe and
that's what I'm using with my ZFS setup. Four of those.
Yes, but 850 Evos.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't even
RAID Z mode. It works pretty nice.
I don't even recommend the 850 Pros,
right?
Because the Evos they treat some of their flash as SLC, which is really super fast. So in some respects, the 850 Evos even outperform their Pro model. Believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed that it was a little hard to figure out whether to get the Evos or the Pros because of that.
It wasn't obvious
whether one was better than the other.
For SATA,
for some things,
Evo is the better way to go. Yeah. And it's like almost half the cost.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper. Yeah.
So what's the advantage of the M.2 drives? Because I've been seeing those come about, and I'm a guy who follows PC hardware.
Sure.
These things appeared a couple of years ago. I'm like, where does this go?
Well, either using NVMe, happening? Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's just because you say M.2 does not equal NVMe.
They're really
the
confusing.
Ones I've been using are all NVMe, but they're not necessarily. Sure. They could be SATA.
So, yes, there is such a thing as M.2 SATA.
Okay.
And that's where it really started, because people were looking for, you know, really slim form factor notebooks that couldn't even fit a 2.5-inch form factor drive. They wanted something more compact. Mm-hmm. That was the first iteration. It was supposed to just be called Next Generation Form Factor. That's what the NGFF thing, which turned into M.2, mm-hmm. right? So initially it was just make things smaller. And then they included, because they were smart and forward-thinking, they included PCIe into the spec for a possibility to connect it. Right. And then Intel pushed NVMe as a... just basically, it's,
so you want all three. You want M.2, PCIe, and NVMe.
Yeah, all three of those things together are all like really small, compact SSD.
And by the way, that's all I buy now on desktop and laptop, because it's notably
much
it's
very, very fast.
And it's just it's hilarious, too, because it's a tiny little chip. And you plug it in, replacing even the 2.5-inch like SSD. It's like, what is... And then it fits in like...
I use it on my boot drives and everything. Crazy. This is an NVMe as well as a
you just have much more bandwidth. You have the equivalent of like...
Huge.
Well, you have a RAID of 4 850 EVOs at home, right?
Yeah.
That is roughly the equivalent of a single M.2 NVMe SSD.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
In kind
well, and that machine boots off an M.2. A 512 gigabyte M.2, and then it uses for data the rate.
Yeah.
The,
so if you're moving stuff back and forth between one and the other, you're actually almost equivalent in speed between both sides, which is good, right? If you need to back up your...
No, that's what I'm using it for snapshots and things like that. Yeah, that's exactly
so
what
So you're
I'm
in the
for.
Ideal situation. Your copies are about as fast as they can go. Yeah.
Nice.
Good to know.
I just, you know why? How I learned that? From you building the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine.
That's true, which is at your house now, right?
Which is now at my house, where it has a very nice home. Very nice home. Hey, this was a lot of fun. We went long because we had such great stuff. And I'm really glad you were all here. Let's all go to dinner. Alex Alex Wilhelm, he is at Mattermark.com.
Yes, sir.
And he's not working at Jet despite the uniform.
Actually, I have Jet socks, too.
That's nice.
Oh, they send out weird swag when they launched. I don't know.
So much money these companies have.
It's almost like they spend too much money before they got bought. Who would have thought?
You know, the rule is always make the T-shirt, then the product. So do you have anything you want to plug at Mattermark? Can people read it without subscribing?
Yeah, they can. Just Mattermark.com/blog and click on anything from editorial. That's stuff that I'm either writing or commissioning and publishing.
So, Mattermark.com/blog.
That's what we're working on.
Thank
and
you,
I'm
Alex.
On Twitter at Devendra. So if you want to follow along.
He's at Alex. He loves it. He's the only Alex on Twitter.
Yeah, how'd you get
Nobody
that?
Else.
I bought it off a guy in Mexico in 2008.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Really?
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Because Alex was a three instead of...
No, different eight. Alex. Yeah, but he kept that. So I was at Alex Wilhelm, and then the guy in Mexico wanted to sell it, and I had $60 in my PayPal account, which was all the money I had at the time to my
Smartest investment you've ever made.
But this was back when FriendFeed was a Twitter competitor, so it was a really different era of social.
That's true.
So I sent him my $60, and he changed his name, and I quickly changed mine to Alex, and it worked.
So your real name is Timmy?
My real name is Bill, actually.
Oh,
but it's the Gaelic spelling and pronunciation, so it comes out Alex in common English. So, you know, don't be racist, is what I'm saying.
No. No. Devendra Hardawar, he's senior editor at Engadget, a great gadget blog. And he's out here for, was out here for IDF.
I'm out here for IDF.
I didn't get to ask you about it, the Intel Developers Forum.
Yeah. It's maybe we'll hear more about their next chips that we've been waiting so long for, right?
Kaby Lake. And what was the other one? Kaby Lake? Kaby Lake? And
that's one of them.
Iraq or something.
Nobody even knows.
All the names are kind of like.
They're all blurred together.
Yeah,
it does. But IDF, they're going to call it?
Huh?
It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's happening this week.
Yeah.
Oh, IDF's coming up. That's right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy IDF. We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Really nice to have you.
Yeah.
Same here. It's great to have Alan Malventano in. Always a pleasure when you're in studio.
Happy to be here.
Please give the best to your friends at the NSA and tell them I didn't mean.
I'm retired.
They know. Oh, okay. They know, Leo.
I didn't mean all those nasty
They make
things
you sign so much stuff when you leave. You're not talking to any of them.
You don't get
you're done.
You're gone.
That's
you're a
but
non-person.
We can get together later on and talk nuclear. I used to do nuclear power.
Ooh.
He is number 9. Don't ask who number 2 is.
I used to run reactor plants on submarines, so we can talk.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. And I have some reason I get the feeling that there's nothing Greg Farrow can't talk about. So
I just make stuff up.
A master of many disciplines.
Yeah.
You'll find him at packetpushers.net. This, I'm sad to say, is the last tweet we'll be doing in this studio. I'm glad you all, this great studio audience, could be here for this. We will next week be doing the very first show There's some question about that, since apparently there's an electrical issue. But we may be in the dark, but
outdoor
we'll be doing.
Show.
Yeah, it might be outdoors.
Oh,
yeah,
we'll be so doing. Awesome.
Might be with a generator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get a generator.
Nice little hum in the background. The entire
time.
I
will make it happen somehow. We'll find a way to make that studio work next week. So do tune in early, because we'll be taking the trolley car over to the new studio at about, I'd say about 2:30, between 2 and 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 2130 UTC. Nice. Join us for TWiT next week and every week. If you can't be here live, you can always get After the Fact on demand, audio or video from our website, twit.tv, or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Please subscribe. We want to make sure you don't miss an episode. Thank you for being here. And for the last time in the TWiT Brickhouse, I say another TWiT is in the can. Bye-bye.